Gotta buy a present. It's 3 in the morning. Nothing's open. What am I gonna do?
I have an idea. Tickets. I'll buy tickets to a fantastic event. I can do it anytime, even now, 3 in the morning, by going to the WBAI donation website, give2wbai.org. There's a great selection of plays, events, discussions, concerts, movies. I'll definitely find something. All I have to do is click on the header that says tickets. I'm saved. Happy birthday, sweetie. That's give2wbai.org and click on the header that says tickets.
$0.33 a day. Not much, is it? Loose change. A third of a cup of coffee. It's nothing. But did you know that $0.33 a day can help WBAI stay on the air? That's all it takes. As little as $0.33 a day. $10 a month. You can be a BAI buddy. A BAI buddy is someone who signs up to make a recurring monthly donation to WBAI using either a credit card, debit card, or by electronic fund transfer from your bank account. It's safe, secure, and easy, and it helps keep our unique, alternative, and diverse programming on the air. You'll get a WBAI membership card and other goodies. Sign up online. Go to WBAI.org and click on donate. All the details are right there. The WBAI buddy. Be one today.
Hi, I'm Danny Glover.
This is Saul Williams.
And this is Michael French from Spearhead.
And this is WBAI, listener-supported, non-commercial radio in New York.
This is Reverend Jesse Jackson of the Rainbow Push Coalition. Please call and support WBAI, non-commercial, peace and justice radio in New York.
All right, we're just about ready to proceed with Night Shift with Mike Sargent. You know, these things always take a little extra time on Monday night after midnight. It's 12:02 and a half. Time now for Night Shift.
You're tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI. I'm Mike Sargent, and you're listening to Night Shift. I have a special episode of Night Shift. It's only going to be an hour tonight from now, midnight, till 1 a.m., and I have some interviews with some filmmakers and some actors for a couple of films that are coming out this Friday. The first is a French film called Samba. It's co-written and directed by Olivier Nakache, and it stars Omar Sy. Now, Omar Sy is currently in Jurassic World. Is it Park? Is it World? Yes, it's Jurassic World. He's in Jurassic World right now. He's done a number of other American films, but his breakout film was his other collaboration with Olivier Nakache. It was a film a few years ago from France called The Intouchables. Not Untouchables, Intouchables. And it was about a man who's a quadriplegic, an older man, who has a younger man to sort of be his live-in helper. And it was a very heartwarming tale dealing with a difficult situation, and it won all kinds of awards, nominated for an Oscar and whatnot, and really put Omar Sy on the worldwide map. Their latest collaboration is called Samba, and it's about a man named Samba who happens to be technically an illegal immigrant in France. Though he's been living there 10 years, working and helping support his family back in Senegal, he ends up getting picked up on the train by some officers who just felt he looked suspicious and now is going to be in the system. Hoping to get out of that system and hoping to help him is a caseworker played by Charlotte Gainsbourg. Charlotte, you may know, she's a famous French actress, but was most recently seen in Nymphomaniac, Part 1 and 2. I got a chance to talk to Omar Sy and the writer-director, Olivier Nakache, about the movie and about both their process. They've been working together for a while, and they have the kind of relationship that most actor and writer-directors, you know, live for, where they have that chemistry that allows them to keep working together, and they have for over a decade now. So I got a chance to talk to Omar about his process, why he does what he does, and of course, when he first knew he wanted to be a storyteller. Then I got a chance to talk to Olivier about his process, how he does what he does with his partner, and why they love working with Omar so much. So stay tuned to an interview with Omar Sy, black French-American actor, and to the writer-director Olivier Nakache for the new film Samba, opening this Friday.
You're tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI, and I'm speaking with actor, writer, producer, Omar Sy. Omar, welcome to WBAI.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
When did you first know you wanted to be a storyteller?
I realized it maybe late, but I had that for a long time ago. Since I was really young, I used to, you know, love telling stories, jokes, and everything, but I realized I wanted to do it maybe I had 20 or 21. Like, I was on radio, on TV. I did that, and I started to realize, okay, I wanted that for living.
What kind of roles are there for black actors in France? Because you seem to be getting them all.
I think the key for me was to try to be a comedian and to be an actor. I didn't try to be a black comedian or a black actor. I never showed up myself as a black something. I just showed up my tape as an actor, as a man, as a comedian. And I think that's why people could see me differently.
As through you, they could see black characters as different things.
Exactly. That's why I'm trying to doing that, because as myself, I try just to be a regular, just an actor.
Tell me a little bit about Omar and Fred, or the true life of Omar and Fred, how you came to that, because that was a short that showed on TV and then went on to be, I believe, a TV movie?
I started with Fred long time ago on the radio. We were on a radio show for 2 years, and then we had a small part in a small show on TV, and we had our own show after that. It was just a long story about two friends. It's an extraordinary connection between him and me about humor, sense of humor, and absurd things, silly, you know.
Yes, I do very, very well, actually.
So we did that for long, and it was for me like the, it was school for me, like drama school for me, because I learned how to write, how to act. I learned a lot of things with Fred with that show on TV. We did that for 15 years. So we had the time to learn.
Tell me a little bit about your relationship with Olivier, because you guys started on his short, Those Happy Days, and that must have been an interesting relationship, because then you ended up being in the feature and then making two or three other movies with him.
Yeah, there are two, actually. There is Olivier Nakache and Eric Toledano. They are two directors. And it was for a short film, Those Happy Days. I was on TV, just have my little jokes, my little show on TV, and they came and say, we want you to act on our short film. I responded, it's really nice of you guys, but I'm not an actor, I'm a comedian. The answer was, you know, that's okay, because we are not directors also, so we can try together.
great, I love it.
So we started like that, and we did this short film. After that, we did a movie. I have a little part on it, and then we did another one, and we did Untouchables and Samba now. So it's a long story that since, you know, 2000, I always, you know, in connection with them, I follow their work, they follow mine. It became a really friendships.
Tell me a little bit about how you two connect and maybe at this point working together for, you know, over 12, 13 years, maybe you can even communicate in a shorthand.
What they do, they define a subject, a topic, they think about it, and then we start to talk. And they say, are you interested about this? Do you want to talk about it? Do you want to act like that? On this topic, they always, before writing, we talk before if I agree or not. We did that with Untouchable, we did that with Samba, and we have a chat like that, and I'm always very curious about what they can write, so I'm always saying yes, because they are good writers, so I'm always curious. I say yes, it at the end, it's always a wonderful screenplay, it make amazing movies.
In doing this role, playing Samba, what was the most difficult or the most challenging part of playing this role, and what's been the most rewarding?
When I see the movie, the thing that makes me more emotional is the scene when they're waiting for the truck, and they wait for, you know, to have a job. And they are like 30 guys waiting for this truck. He picked like, and the other one, the other has done. That scene is the most, you know, powerful for me, saying the most about how it's difficult in France today for those guys. And I don't know why maybe the music, the light is so beautiful, so makes me always feeling, you know, something really deep, because it's saying about those people left their country, all their family, can't count on them, and they're here, and they're waiting for this truck. Their life can change, you know, in 2 seconds. They will pick him or not. So this scene is really, really, really emotional for me. And it shows how it's hard to get a job and everything. The crisis in France, it's so significant about our country today.
Immigration is a huge, huge issue in this country as well. What did you maybe learn about yourself in the making of this film?
I learned that I knew that, but I realized how lucky, how blessed I was, because I don't have to make this effort today, because people already know my name. I can travel easier. So it's different for him. He has to dress, you know, to look like something, because he wants, you know, people accept him. So for me, the acceptance is done. So I realized how, you know, luck I was, because it's about acceptance. I learned that about myself. And maybe I did all of this for that. But now it's easier.
What kind of advice do you give to young up-and-coming actors, and have you found them coming to you, you know, looking up to you as an inspiration?
be yourself. It's kind of cliche, but it's true. You have to be yourself, to, you know, to be happy. So I'm not ashamed to say that. Be yourself. Try to be happy. Do the best you can, and show yourself as you are deeply. Don't be how people want to see you.
Mm.
You know, show yourself as you want to be seen. It's completely different.
Olivier, welcome to WBAI.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be with you.
When did you first know you wanted to be a storyteller?
Oh, you know, when I met my co-director, Eric, we were 16, and we were in a summer camp. And I remember because I heard about him in a very big group in south of France. And I remember that people said, oh, you should talk with this man, because he talks every time about a man, and this man was Woody Allen. And I don't know who is it, but you talked about Woody Allen too, so you have to talk together.
That's
the beginning of our story.
The rest is history.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And I don't know why, but we were, from the beginning, we like to tell stories, and we like to tell stories with humor. That's our way of expression.
In your estimation, what makes a good story and a story worth telling?
Oh, wow, it's a big question. I think for us, we like extraordinary story and ordinary situation. You know what I mean?
Sure.
We like stories about people with a lot of humanity, dignity in a deep context, in a deep society. We talked about our French society, so we like to put lightness on a difficult time.
Is that part of why you choose comedy, or is it you just enjoy laughing?
No, we like comedy, of course, but we think that with comedy, with humor, you can't go faster, you know. In this hard time in our society, we are all very tense. It's a very difficult time. People want to laugh about their fear. Like for the untouchables. Somebody says, le meilleur chemin d'un homme à l'autre, c'est l'humour.
The best path from one man to another is humor.
Et l'humour pour nous, c'est notre bouclier.
And humor for us is our shield.
Yes, it's our shield. Even with deep issues, every time with Eric, we try to find some hope. And with humor, on réussit à ça avec l'humour.
And we feel like we achieve that, like with Eric and I, we achieve that with humor.
And we have a secret weapon, and this secret weapon is Omar Sy.
Tell me a little bit about how you found him, because I spoke to him. He said that you had heard his radio show, and he had really never acted before. So what made you think that he had something in him, and he was somebody you wanted to work with?
Ah, you know, it's... we have the love at the first sight with him. I don't know why, you know, it's a special chemistry. I think maybe the same with Robert De Niro and Scorsese, or the story like this. And when we wrote a script, our words, nos mots vont bien dans sa bouche.
Our words fit nicely into his mouth.
We think that he's one of the best actors of the world, and I'm very serious when I said that. He's a nature. He received a gift, because he never wanted to be an actor when he was a child. So he's got a fabulous destiny. And on the set, when we are with him, everything goes faster. We don't need to talk a lot. He understands us. You know, he's our secret weapon. And now with Samba, he show another thing about his personality. He proved that he's a great actor.
What makes you choose these things that you want to write about, whether, like you said, it's the people's fears of becoming a quadriplegic, or about, in this case, immigration, which is a very difficult, powerful issue to talk about in a film?
Oui, on pense que Omar, c'est un formidable ambassadeur pour ce genre d'histoire.
We think that Omar is an incredible ambassador for this type of subject matter. Because right now we have a wave of actors in France who are actually coming from a way, you know, an immigration that occurred in the 60s, and they feel the need to tell their story.
Like Tahar Rahim, he's French, but he can tell story about our society now, about our France, because there are many Frenches, and France is multicultural, and now we try to separate us, you know, because it's a very hard time in France now. So now we want to rapprocher les gens.
We want to bring people closer together, and Omar is part of this process.
What were some of the most important things you wanted to bring out in this story that you were able to put into the screenplay?
Is humanity, and there's a parallel between Samba. He works every day. He raises himself. He changes identity, and with the character of Alice, played Charlotte Gainsbourg, who she works a lot, and elle n'a plus de sens dans sa vie.
She doesn't have, nothing makes sense in her life anymore.
And she made a big, big nervous breakdown. So we are in a society where the work is the thing the most important. But we want to show another way to happiness. And this way is the communication with other people and other community. When you break, we want to break some wall, you know. And some cliches.
What was the most difficult aspect of making this film, and what's been the most rewarding?
Ah, yes. You know, it was difficult when we are on a tournée dans des vrais endroits.
We shot in real locations, and when we had to shoot at the garbage sorting facility, that was a really tough day.
Parce qu'on a vu la réalité des travailleurs qui travaillaient.
Because we saw the reality of the workers and what they had to go through there.
Et eux étaient très fiers de notre travail et nous disaient bon, voilà, on est fiers de notre travail et on est fiers que Omar va montrer notre travail.
And they were actually very proud of the work they did, and they said, and we're really proud that Omar is going to actually show what the work really is constituted of. And, you know, it's not hard to sort of draw the correlation. Like yesterday when we did a screening in Pelham, there was a woman who said to me that every day she saw someone, you know, looked African, that was smoking his cigarette with his blue-collar sort of work shirt. And she said, well, tomorrow I'm going to ask him what his name is.
So c'est ces petites choses-là qui nous rendent heureux.
Those little things, those are the things that are, you asked me what was the most gratifying, those are the things that are the most rewarding, having those types of reactions and responses.
Is that a goal of your work in general?
It's a goal, but we're not naive. You know, we try to make films that aren't documentaries, that show a great deal of humanity.
On veut, notre premier but, c'est de faire passer un bon moment. Puis après, les gens réfléchissent, tant mieux.
You know, our first goal is that people would have a good time watching our film, that they're going to, you know, it's going to be a good time. But, you know, then if they get something more out of it, great.
Who are some of the filmmakers that inspired you and made you want to be able to make film?
Woody Allen, because he, you can watch his movie. Tout peut voir son film et on y verra toujours quelque chose de différent.
You know, you can watch his movies, you know, again. Every 5 years, you can watch the movies again, and every time, you're going to see something different in Woody Allen movies.
That's true.
And we love the Italian comedy of the 17, because with Mastroianni, Vittorio Gassman, because they're social comedy with a lot of humor, a lot of step back. Sur leur société, ils ont beaucoup de recul.
Seeing their society by stepping away from it a little bit.
And ils avaient des acteurs qui avaient la grâce.
They had actors that were graced.
So we love this kind of cinema, the social comedy, very very funny, but with the social issues and of their country. We like to on pense qu'on fait des films historiques, mais de maintenant, nous.
We feel like we're making historical films, but current, of current history.
What do you hope people to come away with? We talked about a few things, you know, and a few the reactions, but are there any specific goals you have as a filmmaker that you would say, I would like people to come away from this and, you know, discuss, talk, or approach somebody they wouldn't have approached? Did you have any specific creative goals for this and for the audience?
I don't know if what exactly is our goal, but first of all, like I said, I want on veut divertir les gens.
We want to entertain the audience.
Mais avec des sujets forts.
But with strong subjects.
Donc à chaque fois, on se met des nouveaux challenges. À chaque fois, on essaye de trouver le bon équilibre entre humour et émotion. En fait, on apprend notre métier en le faisant.
Donc, so, you know, every time we set up new challenges for ourselves, we want to interweave humor with drama. You know, in fact, we're learning as we go.
Were you surprised by the success of Intouchables, and were you intimidated to feel that you have to in some way top yourself, or that, you know, you're going to be compared to that success and people may feel it's not as good as?
Yes, of course, of course. You know, we know that. We know that Intouchables is a huge wave, you know.
Sure.
We decide to let the pressure in the closet.
To leave the pressure in the closet.
You know, and
okay.
To continue our road. But it's sure that, you know, in Intouchable, there's a special thing, a magic thing, you know, on this movie. The grace came to this movie. So we know that people compare. Because it's with Omar also, but who cares? We decide to continue our road, you know, and very, très sincèrement.
Very, we decided to keep on our path, but with great sincerely, with great sincerity.
Okay, well, Olivier, thank you very much for your time. I look forward. And what do you know? What's next for you?
Yes, we want to make a comedy about the economic problem of our society now. So we work on it. We're writing actually, and we want to make a movie. You know, in just for a film qui se passe sur une soirée.
We want a film that's in one time period that's going to be during the course of an evening.
Yeah, and
take place during the course of an evening.
Yes, and our reference is the party, you know, of Black Edwards.
Ah, fantastic film. Okay, well, great. I look forward to that. I hope I get to talk with you again and maybe get to meet you in person.
Me too, I hope so.
Next is an interesting film called Lucky Stiff. Lucky Stiff is a film that's based on a 1988 musical that comes from the same source material as a film called Weekend at Bernie's. And the film, of course, surrounds a young man who finds out he's been left millions of dollars by a distant uncle he really hardly even knew, but there are conditions. And one of them is that he has to take the corpse of his uncle to Vegas, and there's a whole list of things he's got to do. Of course, this is a farce, and this is actually a musical as well. But what's interesting about this is that it's done as if it were a movie that was shot in the late 60s, early 70s, from the music, the animation, the style of it. And I had suspected, and then when I talked to the director, a lot and inspired by What's Up, Doc, which is one of my favorite comedies. I got a chance to talk to the director, Christopher Ashley, who you may know from a film he did about 20 years ago called Jeffrey, and it starred Patrick Stewart. This new film is essentially arch, funny, definitely off the beaten path, and of course, not for everyone. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I got a chance to talk to Christopher Ashley and the two female stars, Nikki James, Tony Award-winning actress, and Pamela Shaw, who plays a great character. So, stay tuned. The film is called Lucky Stiff. It opens this Friday. It also stars Dennis Farina in his last film role. And you're still tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI.
Don't stir! Yes!
Slow down them up, madam.
No. They make my feet look too big.
This is my nephew, Harry.
Behold the perfect life of Harry Witherspoon.
You should improve your sales technique.
Poor kid never could catch a break.
I'll just bet we're having stew, and my rent is overdue, and I haven't sold a shoe all day.
Don't worry, though. All that's about to change.
Telegram for Mr. Harry Witherspoon.
Mr. Witherspoon!
You see, I just died.
Your uncle has left you an inheritance.
An inheritance?
Six million. The terms of the will are highly unusual.
I'll do anything for that money.
Look at today's paper.
Harry Witherspoon, an unlikely heir to a fortune. Blah, 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 blah. What does this got to do with you?
He inherited the money I embezzled from my husband for my lover who I accidentally shot.
What?
To get his hands on my huge fortune, he'll need to take a little trip.
Monte Carlo.
The only problem is, a few friends might come along for the ride.
We're in Europe with the money! Ha!
Spotlight, please.
What is love if you don't speak French?
I've come all this way for all $6 million, Mr. Witherspoon.
That money is mine.
From the creators of Broadway's biggest hits... a musical comedy.
This is a nonsense.
About money.
Yeah!
There's a huge amount of stick.
Hello?
There they are!
Love.
The first time in my life, my luck has changed.
And death.
Her husband will kill me.
My husband will kill me.
I'll kill myself.
As long as you have a good time.
Wait a minute.
Don't you think?
Yes, I do.
Something funny's going on.
Precisely.
Yes!
No! Oh, my God!
Lucky Stiff.
Promise me you're not going to do anything crazy.
You tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI, and I'm talking with Christopher Ashley, who is director of a new film called Lucky Stiff. Christopher, welcome to WBAI.
Thank you for having me.
When did you first know you wanted to be a storyteller?
I have spent most of my life making theater projects happen. I was an actor as a kid in summer stock. I did Oliver and The Sound of Music and every show with kids you can imagine. At Yale, I started directing theater a lot. One of the first shows I did in New York was a play called Jeffrey, which then when we made the movie of it, I was lucky enough to get to direct. And that was kind of the beginning of my life, both as a stage director and a film director.
Being a director, a stage director, what is the biggest challenge from translating something from stage to screen?
That translation from a stage piece, which is often all the acting is calibrated for people who are sitting 300 feet away, and suddenly right. You've got a close-up camera on them, right? So, like, the acting style is so different on film. In this case, I really loved the stage musical that it's based on and always have, but it also is a kind of caper movie structure, right? Like if there's a chase going on, a guy has a task and a woman is chasing him and gangsters are chasing her. And I think it was always kind of begging to be a movie, this show. So there was something very natural about translating it to the screen.
What you've done is you made it as if it took place in the 70s or 80s, which was kind of almost set up like a 60s, late 60s, early 70s romp.
I appreciate you saying that. That's exactly what we were going for. So I'm glad you felt that. I've always loved the film What's Up, Doc? In an extraordinary movie that's like such big fun, and the tone of it I've always loved. So as I was reading the screenplay for the first time, I thought, wow, this is in some demented way a kind of What's Up, Doc meets those Pink Panther movies, which I love so much, with all of the kind of animation and the
love those too.
And it's a wonderful musical comedy. So the fact that I got to actually kind of shoot something roughly in the style of What's Up, Doc was a big plus.
Setting the tone for a farce is not an easy thing. And not only did you do, you have, the music and the setting and the setup, but you also have the animation, and which from the moment it started, I was like, I get where you're going. So tell me a little bit about how that came to bear and how you settled in on the style and the music and overall tone of this film.
Well, that's one of the great things about making movies, is you get this post-production, period where you have all this rough and raw material that you've shot and you get this time to kind of make 50 different films with the raw material you've got. So I did a first cut of this film and it was fun and I was pleased with it, but there was something about it that was a little bit straightforward. So the animation really came late in the post-production process when I wanted a little bit more dementedness in my film. And so the animation is very rough. It's very kind of playful, but in a kind of, it's like crude funny, not like it's like there's something that's very sort of simple about the look of it, very, not like South Park, but sort of inspired by South Park. So the animation came in to create more kind of extraordinariness and oddness.
Tell me a little bit about casting this and what your criteria were and how people responded to the material.
So we started with Harry, who's the lead guy, I think auditioned people from four continents. We spent about 6 months really looking for our perfect Harry, and this amazing actor named Dominic Marsh from London, who's so kind of charming and diffident and unassuming, and this beautiful voice. Wonderful actor came in, and he was one of those guys who walks in, the first sentence comes out of his mouth, and everybody in the room says, that's the guy. He's the guy for this role. So we started with him, and really amazing people kept kind of raising their hand and saying, hey, can I be in that film? Jason Alexander, an actor who I have always loved and wanted to work with, was one of the first people who came on. Dennis Farina, who's had never done a musical before. It's unfortunately one of Dennis's very last films because he's passed away since then. So I'm kind of honored I got to be Dennis's first and last musical. And Nikki James, who plays the romantic lead I had worked with on Broadway. So it's kind of actors from all over, from film, from London, from stage on Broadway.
Well, I have to say, I was lucky enough to interview Dennis Farina for a film he did called The Last Rites of Joe May, and he was right at that point. As a matter of fact, I believe he was planning to be in your film, and he was very happy that he was at a point in his career now. He'd started a production company, and he had had enough success that he could start to pick and choose the roles and do things that were out of his comfort zone, which I think is, kind of what he did with you. What was he like to work with, and tell me just a little bit about your way of working with actors and what you brought from theater that you were able to bring to film.
There's no one who's a greater guy, bigger gentleman in the world than Dennis Farina. He started out as a cop in Chicago. So,
yes.
Even in the neighbor movie, there's guns and there's all kinds of things you know a lot about if you're a policeman. So he managed to turn himself into our informal consultant for guns and violence, which was hilarious coming out of the nicest man you will ever meet.
I know, and he made a career playing, tough guys, so.
Yeah, very much so. But he was a total softie and couldn't have been a greater collaborator. And even when he wasn't shooting, like when I would often I'd say, okay, Dennis, we got all your stuff for the day. And he'd just hang around for the next 5 or 6 hours watching the other actors doing their work. He really appreciated the craft of acting so much.
And tell me a little bit about your process. I mean, because it's a stage play, I mean, do you in adapting something like this, do you steer away from what's been done? Do you completely reimagine? Do you try and cherry pick?
Because we were shooting this pretty fast, we really had a rehearsal period up front, which is more common in stage, I would say, than film. All the dance numbers were heavily worked out ahead of time. We had this big kind of squash court area that we would just we would absolutely fill with singing and dancing for about 6 weeks before we shot. Joey Peasy did the choreography, and he also did Burlesque and worked on Chicago, the film. So he's really first rate, and the dancing kind of explodes off the screen in what he's done. And so, but all of that was really put together ahead of time. So when we arrived on the set, I feel like people really knew what they were after, knew what they were up to, and were free to take chances.
So was that fun? Was that just part of what you wanted to be able to bring the screen all along when you first read it?
It is. And I have to say, like, there's very few things more fun than directing for the camera a big dance number. I've done four or five of my shows have been lucky enough to have numbers on the Tony Awards, and the movie of Jeffrey had some real dancing in it. So thinking about how you shoot dancing and how you get the whole stage picture in, and then how, like, what do you need to punch in for, and how do you create the kinetic feeling of you're in the room with that movement is one of the funnest things you can do as a director.
I would also think, too, you know, and I keep coming back to tone, which I feel is not the easiest thing to pull off, because some of the material is somewhat arch, you know, and you're looking at your background, you know, you've done things like, you know, Sweeney Todd and Rocky Horror, which I just want to shake your hand for. How much of, you know, what you are, you know, have learned and experienced as a Broadway director, did you have to kind of cast out when you end up doing a film? And then how much, you know, versus what you definitely want to be able to recreate on film that you can know you've done on stage?
I feel like in terms of capturing the tone, usually, because we had rehearsed it, we would do the first couple of takes, and pretty much the actors would kind of try to get, you know, for the camera what we had been planning for. And then if there was time, we would always then say, okay, now let's play. You know, let's make this, like, you know, extraordinarily go for broke, the stakes as high as we can possibly imagine. Let's do one for the, you know, kind of close-up camera that's really
right.
Personal and really simple. So when I hit the editing room, I really had true choices for the kind of size of the performances, and that's because the actors, I feel like, because they really felt like they knew what they were doing, were then fearless to give me other stuff too.
What made you choose this to be the next film that you made versus, you know, I'm sure other things that have come your way?
Some of it is a deep affection for Lynn and Steven and their musicals and their music and their writing. I just think that they're as good as it gets. So when they called me up and said, hey, will you read this script, I immediately knew I was going to take it really seriously. Some of it was what we'd mentioned, the kind of what's up, Doc, of it all. And some of it was, there's something about the spirit of this movie and the idea that you got to kind of grab your life and live it fully right now. Don't wait. You know, engage and enjoy and love and experiment and play right now. That I really connected to, and I felt like that's a message for a movie that I can get behind. It looks like it's going to be a lot of fun to shoot, which it was.
In your estimation, what makes a good story and a story worth telling?
I feel like the stories that I'm attracted to have heart. They feel like they connect to my life in some important emotional way, and they're telling me a story that isn't necessarily in my experience, but that connects to my life. So, like, I'm interested in things that are really particular and things that also have a universal idea connected to them. I, on this film, too, it's big fun. So if you can give an audience a really blissful, delightful experience that transports them in some way, that's a great thing to do with an hour and 20 minutes.
Why do you think we as human beings need to tell stories? What do you think the purpose of the story is?
I think it goes back to, like, the campfire with the cavemen, where, you know, you create a community and you figure out your world by telling each other stories around the campfire. And happily in film now, we got a lot of tools to tell stories that cavemen didn't have, but I think it's the same impulse. It's like we figure out who we are by telling each other stories about our lives.
I agree. And what's next for you? Are you working on another film, another play, something else coming up?
My very next thing is a play. It's actually a musical. We just did it at a theater I run called La Jolla Playhouse in California, and it's called Come From Away. And we just did its first run at La Jolla, and then it moves on to Seattle and probably Toronto. So it's about to have a big life, that musical.
Well, thank you, Chris. I assume they're going to interrupt you soon, but I really, really enjoyed your work. I enjoyed our conversation. I hope I get to talk to you again, maybe when your next thing's coming to New York.
It's a deal.
All right. Thanks a lot, man.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
I'm speaking with Nikki James and Pamela Shaw, who both have great roles in Lucky Stiff. Nikki, Pamela, welcome to WBAI.
Hi.
Thank you.
Considering you both have been doing this for a while, and I'll start with you, Pamela. When did you first know you wanted to be a storyteller?
Well, I actually think it was when I was 7 and played Mrs. Santa Claus, but I cannot swear that it was because of the storytelling, but maybe because of the outfit, which I made. And I really loved applying the cotton to the skirt and to the bonnet. And actually, I remember thinking, I want to be in this profession. And so I think it was all about the glitter. I wanted to be a storyteller. I mean, that's a joke, but the fact is that's always been my great interest, and it's gone in different forms. It's gone from kind of performance art to doing my own shows to a lot of off-Broadway stuff and just wanting to communicate that way.
The first time I came to storytelling through song, and I was a singer before I really did anything else, and I was 5. It's a story I've told so many times, and it's true every time I say it. It was my kindergarten graduation, and my teacher had asked me to sing The Greatest Love of All at our graduation. Mm-hmm. So this is, you know, 1987 or something like that, which ages me, but who cares? You can find all about my age on the internet these days. And I loved singing, and I loved being, you know, theatrical. But the first, and then I saw a Broadway musical that same year. I saw Cats with my parents, and I fell in love with the theater, and I fell in love with transportation and how you could be and create anything you want through the magic of storytelling, both storytelling and the glitter, like Pam said. But I think the first time it really became clear to me that what I wanted to do was tell stories more than perform, like I could have become a recording artist or decided to go that route. I think it really happened to me later. I think the performance part of it was one part of it. And then later in life, I saw Audra McDonald in Carousel. I was like 12 or 13. Center, and it was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. And I cried and I thought, if this is the kind of world that there is where people can tell these stories with people of different races and colors and creeds, and nobody blinks an eye and nobody explains away or makes a point of saying, oh, this person is black, but, you know, they have these black children and they're married. You know, it was just so gorgeous. And that is the thing that's sort of taken me through my life. And my love of storytelling, which is such a beautiful question you asked, only gets deeper the more I can see how much teaching someone or allowing someone to experience life, even for just moments, in someone else's shoes or through someone else's eyes, can create community. I think what we do is a really important thing. And obviously, storytelling is really important. It's what religions are based on. You know, parables are a real thing, and that's how we learn. And when it explores and shows us our humanity.
Why do you think we as human beings need to tell stories? What do you think the importance of stories is, that every culture has it?
I think I said it earlier. I think it's the way in which we understand how we fit into the world, and it's the way in which we understand that there are other people's perspectives. It's a way to transport ourselves and to have an understanding, even in the basest level of what the world looks like 10 miles away from us, 20 miles away, 10,000 miles away. And it is the way in which we understand that our journey is a singular journey, but we are a part of something that is bigger than just, you know, our day to day. And truthfully, there's you learn a lot, but there's also something that I really think human beings love being put into, and this is sort of comes from the play that I'm currently doing. There's this element of like a trance state that happens. It's really relaxing to be lost in a story. Your brain can shut off a little bit, your heartbeat can slow or speed up or whatever, and you can take a break. I think that like some part of storytelling and watching movies and plays and reading books and other kind of narrative work is a way to just, I think it's like, you know, a secondary recharge, the way we would have sleep almost, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree. I feel like we spend our lives in a kind of myopia, and it's all about our little bitty lives and others little bitty and our little bitty communications. And to be storytellers, which is actually to be storytellers of the authors who are the storytellers, or the writers or the composers who are the storytellers, tells a larger story about humanity. And I understand exactly what Nikki's saying, that it's relaxing because it takes you out of your itty-bitty smallness, which we all, us included, we included, whatever you say, live in. And I just got to say also, just to piggyback on what Nikki said, that I really respect your question on that and your use of that word, because I find that that word is not used. It's about what made you want to, you know, be in show business or perform, when I think for what the two of us feel and want to do as artists is really in line with your question. So thank you.
Oh, no, you're more than welcome. I feel the same way. I'm a film critic, but I'm also a filmmaker as well. Playing a character like Rita Laporta, she's so over the top and outrageous. And actually, looking back at your work, I've realized even in small roles, you've been very memorable. What do you bring from theater to film, and what do you have to leave behind? Because, you know, there's such different mediums, and you know, I'm sure it's been said before, you know, less is more in film. You know, how do you know, I mean, of course you got to rely on the director, but, you know, pulling back as opposed to being the way you'd have to play something in theater, bouncing from one to the other, how do you, and I had the same question, of course, for you, Nikki.
Sure. Well, it was a great, great, great challenge with Rita, because Rita's huge, and that's part of her DNA. I mean, she's just huge and a band that has no boundaries. And if you don't have boundaries in film, you're off camera, you know? And so I must say that Chris Ashley really was assistive for that, until I finally, what I had to do was work to keep her interior wild and abandoned and crazy and just with no filter. But I had to restrain her physicality so that it would fit in a frame. And it was challenging. It was challenging. And it was the patting the head, rubbing the stomach thingy.
Maybe I've like completely failed at being like a different actor on film versus stage, or maybe I don't think that much about it. It's a question you get often, and in fact, I got into a really intense debate while I was in Los Angeles with someone who said, you know, stage actors don't understand how to do film because they're too big. They're too big. They don't know how to scale their performance. And I got my sort of my New York cat fur like went straight up on my back, and I sort of came at him and I said, and I really believe this to be true, yes, there are elements of film that like Pam said, you want to be able to stay in the frame, you want to understand the mechanics of where you look on the mat outside the camera so that you can have a good close-up that doesn't make your eyes look crazy. You can see both eyes at the same time. You want to understand that you have to sort of hit your mark here or move slowly when you're bending down to pick up an object so that your camera operator can follow the movement. These are small little technical things that you learn along the way, which, and some of them I didn't know, and some of them I'm learning as we go. About the performance, which is the same thing on stage where, you know, it is so habitual to me to stand three quarters when I'm on a stage. It feels completely natural. Other people might find it strange. I understand the distance that you want to be with someone on stage so that both you can be seen by the entire house. There are these little things. I know if there's a side light that someone stands downstage and someone stands upstage. There's little technical things that you really learn that anyone can learn, truthfully. I really think that there isn't like a stage actor or a film actor thing. Anyone can learn how to stand three quarters or use their voice. But that being said, as far as my performance is concerned, what I have found and what I believe truly in my heart, and hopefully it reads in both my stage performance and my film work, is that you can be as big as you want or as small as you want on any medium if you are being honest and if you are doing the character's justice, if what you are portraying is true. I watch, you know, Jim Carrey on film or some of these great physical comedians. They're enormous. Their gestures, their facial expressions, but they're rooted in a real character. You believe it. And the same can be true. I've seen actors on stage in 3,000-seat houses who don't move except for one small gesture of the hand. And what they are doing is that it's so real that the audience can see it. You don't have to gesture huge to get to the back of the house, and you don't have to be teeny tiny. I think if what you're doing is honest and is rooted in character. So that's my number one thing. And that being said, like, yes, like, talk quieter. That's like a great lesson I learned. Like, you can talk really quiet. In fact, I was telling, this is just an anecdote, and I a friend of mine, right before I was coming to make this film, he said, you know, he gave me a little piece of advice, and this is what he said. He said, I was making a movie with Cicely Tyson, and I remember being in a scene with her and thinking, I don't know why everyone thinks this woman is so good. I can't hear her at all. Like, I don't know when my lines come because she's so quiet. And then he said, then I watched the film and it looks incredible. And I thought, she knows what she's doing. Talk quieter.
Yeah. Hey, Mike, we're going to do a 5-minute warning, okay?
That brings me to my last question then, and this is for both of you. My question for you, Pam, was what was it like working with Jason Alexander? And then for you, Nikki, what was it like working with Dominic?
Well, Jason was fantastic. I'm sure, everybody had said he would be, and he was. But what was amazing about him, it was not only was he warm and funny, we had actually shared an acting class a long time ago, 1902. And so we had met originally and kind of worked the same way. So that was a nice intro. But, of course, he's hilarious. But he is so savvy about every aspect of the business. And now, particularly having done Seinfeld, about camera work, oh, my God, I said, if you teach a class, sign me up. I mean, he knows every little thing, and he's also a director. So it was fascinating to watch him and his technique, not only his natural talent. And we had a lot of fun. I mean, we did a lot of improv, and we just took it out there because we knew we were creating a brother-sister relationship that started long before the camera was rolling and would continue long afterwards. So we did, you know, improv of how we would really annoy each other and did, you know, things like titty twists and, you know, fun little sibling stuff like that.
I'd love to see the titty twist outtakes.
Yeah,
me too.
Nikki, can you tell me a little bit about working with Dominic?
Yeah, well, first of all, Dom has this, the greatest English accent, and it's real because he's, like, totally English. So that was endearing and lovely, and we had all of the same, like, I'm like, it's not vitamin, Dom, it's vitamin, or whatever. But, you know, it was, he and I were both, you know, starring, quote-unquote, in our first film, and we were both, you know, away from home. And we lived in the same apartment complex, and we'd cook dinner together, and we'd drive to set together, and we'd get together and rehearse lines for the next day. And the best part about making a movie with someone who comes from the world of theater is that you inevitably in a theater, in a piece of theater, create a family. And I think we were both used to that. And so we had a wonderful off-camera relationship that really felt like we were building something together. And then working with him, Dominic is so fast and so good. I couldn't have chosen someone else who I would have rather spent 9 weeks falling in love with and fighting with than Dom.
Well, thank you both for your time. I really enjoyed talking.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm Mike Sargent. This has been Night Shift. We'll be back next week with a regular show. Don't forget the pledge, 212-209-2950. Become a BAI buddy.
Live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today.
In the last marathon, in the marathon before that, some people called in and pledged for the Detoxification DVD. It's a award-winning documentary. The trouble is they didn't pay the station for whatever reason, so the station was left with an inventory. So the station actually has in its control, right inside the offices, the DVDs, and hence will be able to ship it out immediately, like in the next day or two. So we're in a good shape as far as getting the DVDs that you order right now out the door, and I mean out the door immediately. So that's all good. So what we're going to do is we're going to offer these at an extremely low price. Lower than we've ever offered them. Absolutely the lowest prices imaginable. So you're getting a deep discount for a really great award-winning documentary on a topic that all of us need. What is the topic? Cleansing. What we call detoxification. Let's be more specific. All of us, at different times in our life, take in things into our body that we shouldn't have. Maybe we didn't know better. When you're younger and you're doing what your peers are doing, you don't have the knowledge, you don't have the science background to ask, you know, is this product good or not good for me in small or large amounts? I mean, even today, if I were to stop outside of a university college, which I did, Columbia University, and I filmed them on the street and I asked them, tell me what's in the actual nutrition that's in a fast food meal. They only said, well, there's some protein. And when I asked them how many cows and what parts of the cow are in the meat, they didn't know. Most of them said, I guess it's a cow. No, you could have 1,000 cows and you could have any part of that cow. And do you realize how many times ground beef has been shown to be contaminated with salmonella? And you know what happens? And I used a simple example. I said, it's about 97 degrees. This is when I did the interview. I said, it's 97 degrees right now. Could you imagine laying a piece of meat on the street for 3 days at 97 degrees, then eating it? The person says, no. Why not? Well, bacteria. Now think of your intestine for 3 days at 97 degrees. Would you then think that there's any difference? Any difference? And they said, oh, I hadn't thought about that. That's the problem. People don't
connect what they eat with the diseases in their body. So when you're eating hot dogs and hamburgers and meatloaf and steaks and chicken, then did you fry the chicken? Yeah, everybody's eating fried chicken. Did you grill the steak? Well, yeah, it's a grilled steak. All that increases its carcinogenicity, its cancer-causing qualities. And did you eat that with a bun? Well, that's acrylamide, and the acrylamide is nothing more than a sugar when it's digested. So, and it also causes cancer. And what about the chemicals that were used? What chemicals? Well, to keep the meat looking red, they use a chemical, sodium nitrite. And that's a known carcinogen, and it's highly allergenic. Didn't know that. And when you had the red wine, it was not organic, and it had sulfites in it. Are you aware that those sulfites impact your lungs? Didn't know that. Thought red wine was good. Well, if it's organic red wine without sulfates, yeah, you're getting resveratrol, and that is good, and grape skin extract, and that is good. But when you're drinking commercial wine, it's not good. Didn't know that. And when you're having the French fries that are made with trans fats and loaded with sodium and acrylamides, and it's going to be congesting in your intestine, well, they hadn't thought about that. Again, we don't think about the consequences in our body once we eat something because we're eating because we're hungry. And we have certain preferences. We want it salty and crunchy, like a potato chip or pretzel or French fry, or we want it soft and sweet, and like ice cream or some muffin. We don't want to spend a lot of time thinking about what goes into our food, how our food is grown. In fact, I just before 10 minutes before I went on the air, I'm sitting here in my office talking with a young guy. He's 19 years old, and he's one of these wunderkinds. You know, I said, if you Google the internet and idiot, my picture comes up, because I'm probably the dumbest guy on the planet when it comes to the internet. It's just not something I pay attention to. And I have, you know, I have my interest in other areas. And but that is his interest, and he's very bright. And I gave him an idea, because I'm enlisting him. I've hired him full-time, because starting in the fall, I intend to launch a major campaign worldwide with just young people. Older people are welcome to join, but it's the young people who are going to save the planet. And it's saving the planet one bite at a time, which is the topic of my new documentary. I just premiered this fundraiser 2 weeks ago for BAI in New York. In any case, I said, I want to get all the young people to be aware of what, where the food is that they eat. And then I showed him that filming at a rock festival, all young people there, and they put on the headset and they watch a monitor. And we set up on the table hamburgers and pork chops and fried chicken and fried fish and all the meat items, and all looking good. And then we had them watch a monitor of how those animals were raised. And it was all done in silence, by the way, for its impact, just music in the background. And the music was the sounds of animals as they're watching, their eyes are watching other animals being slaughtered, and they know they're next to be slaughtered. And not a single one of the 100 young men and women who watched this could not cry. I mean, they were retching. They grabbed their head. They had to look away. And then the question was asked, do you want the hamburger now, the hot dog? And they would just, no. Now, you can say, well, isn't that a little, you know, strong? Yeah, it is. But compared to the suffering of that animal, no, it's not. But it made a difference. What do you want to bet that a substantial number of those people who saw that, that will give them second thought, a pause before they eat that animal protein? So we're going to try to save the planet one bite at a time. That's the campaign I'm starting. And and getting people to be aware. And young people are not yet fully corrupted. They still have some idealism. There's still a lot of room in their cognitive space for change in a good way. And so I'm very optimistic about the future because I'm very optimistic about all the idealists in the young movements today. We focus upon those who are just not doing anything that we would consider appropriate. We're not paying attention to the ones who are. There's so many good young people today. And in no small measure, they're good because they're good parents, too. You know, you're epigenetically connected to your environment, including, you know, the kind of a time and attention and the love and the guidance and the tough love and, you know, the boundaries and manners and empathy and understanding people. All that, you know, that doesn't happen in a vacuum. And frequently it happens with a lot of competition and a lot of pushback. So all the more power to the parents who, you know, remember what it was that we, the baby boomers, and our parents, the greatest generation, how we were taught and some of the lessons we learned. Was it perfect? No. But boy, was it a whole lot better than what has happened in the last go-around. So that's the movement. Now, I give you that as an extended little background because just imagine the average person listening, when was last time you really thought about where your food came from, how many chemicals went into it, how processed it was, and what's the likely outcome when it starts being broken down in your body. So we become toxic. And how about the 80,000 human-made chemicals that have never been tested, not once. No test in history has tested all the chemicals we use. And yet we're told that these are safe. Well, how would you know they're safe when you haven't tested them synergistically? You're breathing them in. You know, in a cab, you see that stupid little monitor giving you the news and advertisements. Well, that's because of Wi-Fi. That means there are electromagnetic pulses of non-ionizing radiation going into that cab that's impacting your brain and your body. We have 55 studies showing it actually can change the nature of our brains. So wouldn't you like to know that? Would you turn it off if you knew that it was causing that? Would you use your cell phone if you knew that your cell phone was overheating chromosomes in the brain? Would you still drink the same amount of alcohol if you knew that every glass of hard alcohol you drank killed a million brain cells, million liver cells, million kidney cells, million heart cells? That you literally, with non-drunk social drinking, just socially drinking, you could knock 15 years off your lifespan. So instead of living to be 90, you live to be 75 and not in good health. Would you do the same thing? If you knew that by eating a low-calorie diet, it would help lengthen the lifespan of the cells, would there be anything changing? I think a lot of people in this audience would like to live a longer life and would look forward to spending 20 years enjoying life without disease. So let's say you haven't done it right up to this point, or you've done some things right and you have, and some things wrong. Detoxification and Natural Approach, the award-winning documentary, shows you how to clean up the mess inside your liver, rejuvenate your liver, rejuvenate your kidney, rejuvenation of the heart muscle, the brain, all the damage we do with amyloid plaque to our brain. And we do a lot. You have no idea, Michael G., how many people I'm seeing today are in their 40s and 50s on behalf of their mother and fathers who now have dementia or Alzheimer's. In fact, it's staggering because not only out of a moral obligation are you going to take care of your parents, but now you're seeing people who are going into that dark place where they don't even recognize who you are. And one woman, she's 47 years of age. She is a highly educated person. She works out at a lab on Long Island. She has two children
And she was just at a point in her life where she said that she was going to start taking care of herself and doing some of the things, because she's worked so hard being a mother, being a homemaker. She's a single mother now. And now when she started to exhale, now she's got to take care of her mother because her father can't. And she said in the last 2 years of seeing her mother slip away, last week, she said it was the final straw. She spent the whole morning with her mother. Her mother didn't recognize her. And it just tore her heart out. She says, is there anything that could be done to help bring my mom back? And I said, yes, there's a lot that could be done. And it's done in segments. So I gave her the first 3 months. And already I got a call, and I got a call yesterday where the woman said, my goodness, I'm seeing a difference already. Her energy is up. She is spending more attention on things. She still has the condition, but I see some improvement. So that's what detoxification means. It means undoing damage that we've accumulated, or those that we love have accumulated. And this is why it's so important. So if you want to live a longer life, a healthier life, if you want to undo a lot of the damage done from our younger days, because that's still there, by the way. Anyone who says, oh, I stopped smoking 20 years ago, the damage you did is still there. I haven't drank since college, it's still there. Well, I stopped doing drugs, it's still there. I used to be a heavy meat eater, but I haven't, and it's still there. You don't just walk away from it and say, oh, let's look forward. With your body and your DNA, you can't look forward because you've got to repair the damage to that DNA. That is what this means. So, Michael G., this documentary, this powerful, powerful documentary, will help people step by step regain their life, step by step get their life back if they follow it. And now, mind you, when I'm working one-on-one with people, I only work with terminally ill people. And the reason I only work with terminally ill people is because they got to do it all. They can't cheat. Normally, people only change to the degree that there's discomfort. The moment they feel discomfort, they stop. The moment they have to give up something they're used to, they stop. So you don't see as good a result or as extensive a result, but you see results. But when you do it all, wow, do you see results. Now, you've heard people on this program who've been on as guests, and you've heard how much they've changed. You've heard how Eutrice Lee has changed. Eutrice would be dead today. Absolutely, positively, unequivocally, her doctors opened her up, opened her chest up. Stage 4 lung cancer, B, and told her to go home and put her life in order to make herself comfortable, which meant that she had weeks to live, and she would be put on some pain medication, and that would be it. And but now, Eutrice is on her way to recovery. She still has cancer. She could still die, but she's no longer stage 4. And when she came to see me, she came with a walker and a cane. She was shuffling. She's been a diabetic for 22 years, on medications, still couldn't control her blood sugar, and high blood pressure, and she was obese. Well, she's lost 54 pounds. She's taking no medications at all, and her blood sugar is normal. She's no longer diabetic. And she has energy galore, and she's walking, power walking, fast power walking, fast power walking. And over the age of 60, she would actually be a winner in some races, 7 miles a day, on her way to 10 miles a day. And her doctors, her oncologists at the hospital, said, we don't know what the hell's going on, but keep doing whatever you're doing. They think she's taking chemotherapy because she got a prescription for it. She's never taken it. So she's not telling what she's doing, but she had to detox. So that she's 3 months past her death date. This is Eutrice Lee that was on BAI with TalkBack. She created a TalkBack program that she then turned over to Hugh Hamilton for over 21 years. And so now she's got her life back. Now, If she just lives another week, she's living a quality of life. And mind you, her brother's a physician, an Orthodox physician, who is opposed to what she's doing, but now can't understand what she's doing. Can't understand, can't fit it into his brain how she's still alive. Doesn't understand it. Well, it's not important that he understands it. It's important that she understands it. It's her life. So she's alive. She still has cancer. She could still pass. But every day, for 3 months, she's had a quality of life. She wakes up, gives a prayer that she's alive for another day, engages in what's important to her each day. That's the power of detoxification. Because she's on a 100% detox protocol. I said, I will only give you my help if you do everything I'm telling you. You can't cheat. And she's agreed, and she's done it. So any place you want to go on that spectrum, you can. To do a little, to do a lot. To commit yourself to your own health completely or slightly. That's your call. That's your choice. That's your freedom of choice. But at least I'm giving you the tools. So, Michael G., that's it for a description of it. Now let's play some of it, even before we give our number out, at this ridiculously low price the station is charging. And it's able to charge this ridiculously low price because they've got that there in-house and are going to send it right out. They don't have to order it. They don't have to pay for it. It's done. They pay for it. It's in-house. It's ready to go. It's called detoxification. It could start people's lives in a good way. It could undo so much damage that's been done. Let's play some of it right now for the audience.
Parasites have become more and more prevalent in our day and age. And it's because of the tremendous amount of communication that we have now all over the place. And what I mean by this is that people are flying all over. There's a great emergence now of international travel. Certainly, there is a kind of environmental level that we've sunk to because of the various deterrents in the atmosphere, soil, and the water that make it possible for parasites to emerge into the health scene.
We know that most municipal water supplies don't filter out bacteria, viruses, parasites, pesticides, and those things are things that people ingest every day when they drink that water.
Usually what people think of when they think of a toxin is chemicals. And we're exposed to chemicals everywhere we go. We're exposed to car exhaust. We're exposed to chemicals if we clean our house. Some household cleaning supplies are very, very toxic. We're exposed to chemicals if we wear makeup, if we wear deodorant. And, of course, it behooves us to select the least toxic products possible to put on our bodies. Our skin is our largest organ, and it will very rapidly absorb anything that we put on it. And wearing perfume, while it is smells very pleasant to some people, it really is not a good practice because our bodies absorb all the chemicals in the perfume that we put on. We're exposed to chemicals where we work. For instance, if you have a copy room where you work, the fax machines, the copy machines put off vapors that contain harmful chemicals. Some jobs are very toxic in just by the nature of the work that the person does. Many industrial jobs are a large chemical exposure to the workers there.
I don't know if people have heard this, but it's becoming more well known that there are sick building syndromes due to poor ventilation. There are a lot of chemicals that are used in paints, in furniture, and there's excessive amounts of formaldehyde, inorganic and organic solvents that we breathe in on a daily basis that also can make us very sick.
One of the things that I would really like to mention is the toxicity of heavy metals, particularly aluminum. Half of the cookware that's manufactured in the United States today is made of aluminum. Dr. Parcells knew that that was a very dangerous metal and it should not go into the body. People using aluminum cookware and using aluminum foil are running terrible health risks. Aluminum has not only been implicated in things like senile dementia, but it actually is now, people are admitting, even science is admitting, that it is dangerous to bring that into the body.
Well, if you have plumbing that still has lead solder in it, you can be getting a lead contamination. If you cook with aluminum cookware, you can be getting an aluminum contamination. If you have silver fillings in your mouth, you may be receiving toxic doses of mercury. Another toxin is electromagnetic problems. All electrical appliances, high-powered wires, all emit electromagnetic fields, and these can be very toxic to us. We first heard of electromagnetism being a problem whenever a patient walked in one day and announced that she had worn an electric watch for 4 years with no battery, and it kept perfect time. And this, of course, was mind-boggling to us because we had heard of people who had electromagnetic problems, but we had never encountered one before. She went on to say that at her job at the lab, they would not let her in the computer room because the computers went crazy whenever she walked in the room. And I was telling one of our employees about this patient. She said, oh, yeah, my computer turns on every time I walk by it. These are people who are severely affected by the electromagnetism, the electromagnetic radiations that they encounter in life.
You know, we could talk about heavy metals or other substances like organophosphates that are found in pesticides or solvents, but people don't commonly think of medications as also being neurotoxins. There are a variety of medications that are actually toxic to the nervous system. For instance, neuroleptics, which are prescribed for schizophrenia, are extremely toxic to the nervous system and produce Parkinson's-like symptoms, as well as Parkinson's disease and other types of movement disorders in which people have unusual and very profoundly disabling types of motor movements. In children, for instance, I found a high correlation of children diagnosed with autism, a direct correlation with their antibiotic exposure at a young age. Very, very commonly when you do a history of a child diagnosed with autism, the mother will tell you that he's had 25 to 30 ear infections and numerous, numerous antibiotics.
At the other end of the spectrum, we have senior citizens who are walking pharmacies or taking anywhere from 3 to maybe 15 medications to control a whole host of symptoms, including abnormal behavior, psychotic behavior, depression, fatigue. And this is not normal. This is not a result of medicinal deficiency of these drugs as much as it is as a buildup over time of toxins in the environment, in the food that they eat, and in the water that they drink, and the air that they breathe. This is the end result, and it does not have to be treated with medications.
There is substantial evidence that taking medicines results in illness in a very large segment of people consulting physicians, so that a good deal of medical practice actually can be accounted for by the difficulties encountered as a result of taking medicines. And the take-home message as far as toxicity is concerned is that these medicines that we take have to be detoxified, and they join a stream of substances in our body that may make a very big difference in the total burden of the stream. Now, take, for example, antibiotics, which in general, I think I was brought up in medicine thinking, gee, you know, since an antibiotic is not aimed at my chemistry, but is aimed at a germ inside me, then it's okay, I can take it, it won't bother me. And many antibiotics are very well crafted to do very minimal damage to my own chemistry and just go after these bad germs. And of course, antibiotics are life-saving and very important tools that science has brought us. On the other hand, when you take an antibiotic, you kill off a substantial number of the healthy germs that live in your digestive tract. And some fairly nasty germs may move in and produce toxins that completely alter the situation as far as your toxic burden.
The concept in children with autism, for instance, is that high exposure to antibiotics leads to a state of dysbiosis. This means that there's a disruption in the ecological balance, if you will, of normal bacterial flora in the intestinal tract, as well as pathological types of flora, including bacteria known as anaerobic bacteria and yeast. these anaerobic bacteria and yeast have very, very profound metabolic activity. They release a variety of neurotoxins that are circulated into the bloodstream and have a variety of neurological symptoms.
What the intestinal flora is bacteria that's native to our colon. It's healthy, it belongs there, and what its function is to help fight off viruses and colds and flus and things like that to help keep us healthy. When there's too much fermentation going on, the flora can get out of balance. What happens is there is a bacteria in the colon called Candida. It's a normal, healthy part of our intestinal flora. What happens is, since it's yeast-like in nature, when things start to ferment, it grows and overtakes the flora, the bacterial level in our colon. And that can also cause a lot of illness and sickness and disease.
An excess of body, normal body chemicals can be a toxin. If you exercise a lot and get an excess of lactic acid in your muscles, this can be a toxin. If the acid-alkali balance in your body is skewed, this can be a toxin. For example, your stomach must be acidic for your protein to digest. Your small intestine must be alkaline for the digestive enzymes to work. And if this acid-base balance is off, this can cause toxic and health problems for a person.
These are medical doctors you've just been listening to. They're all aware of how important it is to start a healing journey by cleansing and rebalancing the body's cells, getting healthy bacteria into your gut, the consequences of eating the sugar that creates bad bacteria and limits good bacteria. Simple things. We're not talking about anything that complicated, but we have to start our journey of healing somewhere. And starting where we have some guidance is essential. So, Michael G., that's just a few of the people in this documentary and showing them what we're dealing with. We're dealing with everything. Chemicals in our kitchen, what we have under our sink that is toxic we never think about, in our refrigerators, in our medicine cabinets, and in our garages, the things we put on our hair, which can cause cancer, and on our skins, the antibacterial soap that actually is dangerous for us. So I tried to hit everything that was important, your computers, your cell phones, the towers that are all over the New York area on buildings. Generally, they're disguised. Most people would never know that there is a tower on a building. In fact, where there was a demonstration on the Upper West Side where we were focusing on these transmission towers, the cell phone transmission towers, and how they can create electromagnetic pulses in the whole building. And people who were in the building didn't know there was a tower on their building. Yet a woman said that she, for the first time, had been having migraine headaches, and she had blood coming out of her nose, and her doctor, no one could figure out why. And this happened just at the time that this tower had gone up there that she was unaware of. So everything that we eat, everything we drink, everything we breathe, we have to try to understand there's going to be a consequence, either positive to our health or negative, supporting disease. So Michael G., time now. We are 40 minutes into the program.
Mm-hmm. We're 40 minutes into the program.
Offer the number of people to call and the price for the DVD.
All right. We're 40 minutes into the program, and we thank you all for your patience and actually not so much patience, but listening to us, putting this all in context as Gary does each and every time he joins us and makes these presentations, has to put it into context. And certainly, first and foremost of that context is detoxification, and that's what we're talking about right now. Detoxification, a natural approach. Detoxification, a natural approach. This DVD by Gary Null It is available, and it is a ridiculously low price. It's a $50 contribution to WBAI right now, and I ran into the area where we keep these items at, our thank you gifts, and they are sitting right there on the shelf, and we can send them out immediately. That is correct, immediately. So the number to call is 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950 for detoxification, a natural approach. And doing this, putting these things in context, starting things off so we have to understand the process of getting ourselves back together after years, in many cases, of bad behavior and not treating ourselves really very, very well. Actually, as we've said before in the past, treating our automobiles much better than we treat our own bodies, our living, breathing bodies. The number to call is 212-209-2950. Detoxification, a natural approach. So many toxins in the body. This information that we are bringing you right now is commercially free. That's why we're able to do it in this fashion, because of our commercial free nature. If we had to pause for commercials, I guarantee you not one moment of this message, not one moment of this information would be allowed to come to you. But because we're listener sponsored, because you have supported us over the years and supported this program in particular. The regular program airs at 12 noon, but this is, as Gary said in the beginning, you heard what he said, I don't have to go over that. It is special for the station. We're taking this time to ask you to support us, a $50 contribution. It's a thank you gift. That's what it is. It's a thank you gift to you for supporting WBAI. Detoxification, a natural approach. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Detoxification, a natural approach.
And Michael G. on PBS stations, this went, was asked for $125. So you're getting it. And the last time we offered it on BAI, it was for $75. You're getting it for $50. It was my suggestion. Offer it so people who are in limited budgets but need this information can have it. So $50, that money immediately goes to help pay the bills, and you in turn get this out the door. I've been assured that the volunteers are going to get you this immediately. $50, again, the number, please.
212-209-2950. 212-209-2950.
Michael G., let's play another section.
Sure.
The symptoms of a toxic brain can be very, very expansive. Brain toxicity or neurotoxicity can manifest itself in a variety of ways. People can have irritation of their peripheral nervous system, which would give symptoms like neuropathy, numbness in their hands, difficulty walking, and difficulty with their balance. Conversely, the central nervous system is also vulnerable to toxins from the environment, and these can cause problems such as confusion, behavioral difficulties, dementia, spinal cord problems. So really any area of the nervous system is vulnerable to various types of environmental toxins.
These two systems, the central nervous system and the immune system, whose joint activity is perceiving the world around us and remembering it, and then responding to it by a process we call recognition, that these two places, these two activities of the body, are the home of permanent cells. And we want to take good care of these cells. It's almost as if they're the queen bee in the hive, and all the other worker bees. If we remember that we are the owners of these permanent cells, which are in many ways the repository of our enduring self, then we may take a little bit more serious approach toward protecting them from accumulating toxins that will impair the health of these permanent cells. To me, this notion that there are within us these two populations of permanent cells is one of the most important facts that I've learned as a doctor and guides me, especially in thinking about this business of detoxification, that getting rid of things in our body is not just so that our skin stays looking nice. We can get new skin tomorrow, so to speak, in terms of the replacement of cells that come with the healing of a rash or a small scar from a trauma. But we cannot get new cells in our central nervous system and in our immune system.
The brain is a particularly vulnerable organ to toxins. The reason why the brain is particularly vulnerable to toxins are for several reasons. One is that a small area of damage to the brain could produce very, very profound effects. This is in contrast to other organ systems like the liver, for instance, or other organ systems in which if you lose a small area of that organ system, you may not necessarily see clinical problems. But in the brain, even a small area of brain damage could produce very, very profound neurological problems. The second reason why the brain is particularly vulnerable to environmental toxins is because it lacks the reparative processes that you normally find in other cells of the body. The third reason that the brain is particularly vulnerable to toxins is because there's a highly advanced communication network that the brain uses. It's a very, very intricate system that basically the world's most powerful and sophisticated computer pales in comparison to the ability of the brain to process and communicate information. Well, you can imagine that if you interrupt this elaborate circuitry that exists in the brain, you can really have catastrophic and devastating clinical manifestations.
When people are reacting to chemicals, all parts of the immune system are being affected. Once an allergic reaction starts, there's an immune cascade that takes place. Histamine and serotonin are released from the mast cells in the body, and these cause inflammatory symptoms and unpleasant symptoms. Other chemicals that are released affect the brain, and this is where the brain fag or the brain fatigue comes in that makes it difficult for people to think. Most of the time when people have brain symptoms where they're either confused or they don't have memory, they're reacting to a chemical.
One of the interesting relationships of brain diseases is its relationship to the immune system. The immune system functions as a highly sophisticated alarm system or security system for the rest of the body, including the brain. The immune system utilizes a variety of substances, including cytokines, which are these messenger molecules that communicate with other parts of the body to mobilize immune cells. Well, we know that these cytokines are neurologically active. They are receptors on brain cells that actually respond to these immune signaling devices. This is a beneficial effect, but there's also a double-edged sword. The reason why it's a double-edged sword is because when the immune system actually goes on an offensive, for instance, if a person is exposed to a virus or has head trauma or is exposed to a variety of neurotoxins, this mobilizes the immune system. When the immune system is mobilized, a variety of things happen, including the migration of certain types of white blood cells that are highly toxic to the foreign invader. For instance, if a person is exposed to a bacteria or a virus, the immune system sends out pellets of poison which actually neutralize the invader. Unfortunately, that this also makes the brain particularly vulnerable to the immune system as well. It's sort of like an innocent bystander. The immune system goes on the offensive against what's a perceived threat to itself, but in the process of this elaborates certain types of chemicals, including free radicals, that are actually very, very damaging to a person's own nervous system.
Fatigue of all types, probably one of the most common symptoms that people come to a doctor's office for, and many times everything will be normal on blood tests and exam, and eventually they're told that it's psychiatric, and yet fatigue, especially including brain fatigue, inability to concentrate, to focus, to stay on task, can be a sign of toxicity.
Memory problems are a common neurological type symptom. People may have no short-term memory at all. They may have some long-term memory of things that happened back before they got sick, but they'll have virtually no short-term memory. This is one of the problems in treating these people is You have to be very, very careful that you give very, very explicit instructions when they're in the office. And then you have to be careful to send them home with written instructions, because many times when they get home, they'll remember that you talked to them, but they will not remember anything you said. And so it's very important for them to have written instructions to which they can refer later.
The two extremes of vulnerability for people exposed to brain toxins are at an early age, infants and children, and people at the other extreme, the elderly. The reason for this is as follows. Children are very vulnerable to brain toxicity because the nervous system is going through a high rate of development and growth at that period of time. Conversely, old people are also vulnerable to brain toxicity because of the fact that they have lost their ability of a concept called plasticity, which means that the brain is able to repair itself.
Once again, Michael G., these are people, medical doctors, who are showing the impact of cleansing and detoxification on their patients. I remember when I first got into the field, there was a Dr. Ray down in Dallas, Texas. I don't know if he's still there or not, but he had the clinic that anyone who was suffering from environmental allergies or chemical sensitivities could go to. And if you ask the average person, even the average physician, about chemical sensitivities, it was like chronic fatigue syndrome. They didn't believe it existed. They thought it was all psychosomatic. It was all in your mind because they didn't study it in medical school. There was no drug to treat it. There was no even proper way to diagnose it. So they just, you know, gave it their backhand. Well, in point of fact, they were the canary in the coal mines. They were seeing up around Love Canal, just seeing all these children who were developing all these problems where they couldn't be around a car, they couldn't be near a gas station because it would trigger reaction. And so we had this whole idea that we had these phantom conditions because of people must have had something wrong when they were being raised because you whiz, nobody else was suffering from these. Well, they were. And Dr. Ray would help detoxify them. He would chelate out a lot of the heavy metals and the lead, the cadmium, the mercury. And then we hadn't even paid attention to how important lead and mercury were at that time. Now we are. There's whole specialties in medicine about the autoimmune toxicity, what happens when you have too much of a heavy metal in your body, what it does to you. And now we know it can affect your behavior, it can affect your learning, your cognition, your sleeping patterns. It definitely affects your immune system. So this documentary helps you understand how to have a stronger immune system, go through a winter without the colds and flus that most people suffer from, because you're building your immune system naturally. That's the key. So, Michael G., give the number, and it's only $50, just
$50. That's right, $50 for detoxification, a natural approach. Detoxification, a natural approach, a $50 contribution to this radio station, WBAI. Detoxification, a natural approach by Gary Null. The number is 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. And I really appreciate, Gary, you at the top of the show talking about the saving the planet one bite at a time. And then the little vignette that you talked about the suffering of the animals and then the young people watching the video just in silence, looking at it, and then, you know, the people were weeping. I remember years ago I watched this this presentation, I think it was called The Guns of Autumn in the 1970s. I will never forget that, how people were allegedly hunting, and they were hunting animals in wild animals, exotic animals, in a confined space. And it was just the most horrific thing that I had ever seen. And so I could really relate to what you're saying about the suffering of animals. And, you know, you wouldn't think about eating, and you pointed this out many times, your dog or or your cat or another pet, but we don't think about the animals that we eat. So I just wanted to say I appreciate that story that you told. In any event, detoxification, a natural approach, a $50 contribution to WBAI, and more important, I have to say, Gary, than the thank you gift, is having the station here so we can have these discussions and talk about these things that are just not heard, are just not aired in the major media. But we do it here on WBAI. Gary has been part of this radio station 39 years. 212-209-2950. $50 contribution. Detoxification, a natural approach.
Think of it this way. I don't know a person that doesn't benefit from detoxing. I detox every Sunday. I don't eat solid food. I juice. There are certain juices I take, always starting with a base that is about 12 ounces of celery, cabbage, and cucumber, then green apple. Then I put ginger and lemon in, and then arugula, parsley, and kale, collard greens, and Swiss chard. And I have that twice, 32 ounces. Then I have a citrus juice. I'll have lemon, lime, and grapefruit, no orange, and with a little bit of manuka honey. And I juice the whole skin and seed because about 80% of the healing benefit in citrus is in the skin and seed. And something that simple gives rejuvenation. Then you want a chlorophyll drink. This is a smoothie where you put in a couple tablespoons of your chlorella or spirulina and garlic, and you liquefy that and you drink it down. Boy, that chelates, grabs and takes out of the body the heavy metals. Simple things, not expensive, easy to do, but it helps keep you younger, longer. It helps de-age the cell. It helps take heavy metals out. Now imagine if we all did that, how much healthier and longer we'd be living and how much less suffering we would have from all the diseases and how much less money we'd be spending. And with so many people not being able to afford doctor care today, with so many people not fully covered, even though they're technically covered, the copays are so high that that they don't go to a doctor because they don't have the $5,000 or $10,000 or $20,000 that it would cost them. So, you know, we're not looking. If we were a truly humane and evolved society, we would have a single payer for everyone, and there would be no profit to be made in health care. Hospitals, medications, medical technicians would be using, and doctors, nurses would be using the latest state-of-the-art, both complementary and orthodox, whatever works, but it wouldn't be controlled by a pharmaceutical cartel for profit only. They wouldn't be exploiting it, where they had the power of lobbyists to get in and write the Obamacare law for themselves. They just announced, by the way, they're raising the fees as much as 50%. It was already high, and we knew this would happen. We told everyone, no one listened, because they were wanting to align themselves politically. And we do this all the time, and it keeps coming back at us. So I want people to be healthy. I want them to live a long life. I want people to enjoy a quality of life that they deserve. So last time out, give a call and give this to someone you care about. Help a mother, a father, aunt, uncle. Help someone who needs it. Everybody needs some health. Help. Everyone. And in fact, yesterday, get myself a juice, this guy came in. He had parked outside. He was driving a cab. And he came in and he's asking the guy at juice bar, what kind of juice you got for quick repair of your muscles? And the guy said, I'm not sure. And I said, maybe I can help you. I was standing there, had my juice, and I said, what do you need it for? He said, well, I'm a boxer, and I'm going into some championship, I'm exhausted, my muscles are beaten up. So I gave him a whole protocol of how to turn off inflammation in the muscles, help repair the muscles, how to have more sustainable energy. And he was very grateful. He was very appreciative. And I said, how old are you? He says, 23. And I said, and what are the conditions you have at 23? And he listed about five conditions he had at 23 and an athlete because he didn't have a good diet. You know, he had drank, he smoked.
You know, he did a lot of the stuff a lot of young people do, but thought as long as he was an athlete and a successful athlete, that's all that counted. No, it doesn't. So just imagine if you're not an athlete and you've done a lot of things in your earlier life and you wished you hadn't. Well, we can undo a lot of that. We can have a reprieve. We can have another chance. And this documentary, Detoxification, A Natural Approach, it gives you that opportunity to see what you can do to cleanse, rebalance, and rejuvenate your cells. And all the people in the film are the leading experts, leading medical doctors, board certified in their field. It's not me giving you the advice in this film. It's they who are giving the advice. And this is an award-winning documentary. Last Call, it's only $50. And when I say only $50, it was never $50. It was $75 the before, and it was $125 on the PBS station.
That's right. That's right. It was never $50, believe me. And people are calling in right now. Gary, we have another clip. I hope we can play this other clip. People are responding.
Let's play it real quick.
Okay, here we go. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Detoxification, A Natural Approach. $50 contribution to WBAI. Detoxification, A Natural Approach by Gary Null.
The things that we should eat for optimum colon health are a lot of leafy green vegetables, fresh fruit. In moderation, there again, if we eat too much fruit, it can also set the flora off balance, so the flora then won't do its job fighting off viruses and colds and things like that.
On any detox program I lead, one of the first things I do is get people off all gluten, like wheat, oats. And the reason for that is so many people have allergic reactions. It sets up chronic fatigue. Not chronic fatigue syndrome, but after you eat wheat, you generally get a brain fatigue. So you feel like you're tired, you want to take a nap. Well, think of the people that are always having, like, a sandwich for lunch, bread for breakfast, or a bagel for breakfast, a pasta for dinner. It's all wheat. Now, you've all known what happens when you give up wheat for a week, right? You go through some headaches and with fatigue, withdrawal, your body goes to something like a healing crisis. But then you come up on the other end of that with more energy than what you've had in a long time, right? Suddenly, energy you never knew you were capable of experiencing, you now can experience, you can now have. So I want you to see what it's like to get off dairy for a week, sugar for a week, all wheat in all forms for a week, all beef for a week, all chicken for a week, and see if you don't see an enormous difference. Though the first couple of days, you may go through a little fatigue, withdrawal symptoms, but I'll show you how you can take niacin, vitamin C, vitamin B6, aloe vera, quercetin, pycnogenol, the nutrients that can help us detoxify without gross harmful effects, like bifidus bacteria, the polysaccharides in the intestine, the psyllium, garlic, all this helps reduce our withdrawal effects.
There are a variety of fats that we ingest in our diet. There are saturated fats and there are unsaturated fats. Clearly, saturated fats are injurious and harmful to the brain. The reason why they're harmful to the brain is for several reasons. One is that saturated fats reduce the fluidity of cell membranes. As we mentioned earlier before, cell membranes are the receptors that respond to neurotransmitters and other brain chemicals to produce a desired effect within the brain. When a cell membrane, which is chiefly composed of various lipids and fat materials, loses its fluidity, it becomes less able to modify itself and produce its desired effect when a neurotransmitter binds to its receptor. Well, how does one affect fluidity of these cell membranes? We now know that the composition of our diets, and specifically the composition of the lipids in our diets, whether we eat saturated fats or unsaturated fats, actually changes the lipid composition of our cell membranes. When a person has a high saturated diet, this actually changes the fluidity of the cell membranes within neurons, and it makes neurotransmitters less likely to be responsive in their interaction with the cell membrane receptor. So another beneficial way of improving the brain's functioning and optimizing brain wellness as well as detoxifying the brain is by looking at a person's composition of fat in their diet.
Whole grain products such as whole wheat, brown rice, millet, quinoa, beans, things in their most whole state rather than denatured, unfibrous foods.
So in the process of looking at a step-by-step approach, number one is to eliminate any common abusive substance, sugar, nicotine, alcohol, caffeine, or chemicals. Number two, look at any food that you're maybe using too much of or abusing, and particularly cow's milk and milk products and wheat, and take a break from these. Increase the amount of fruits and vegetables in your diet and drink good water, up to 6 to 10 glasses a day, ideally away from your meals, 2 or 3 glasses when you wake up in the morning, and two glasses half an hour to an hour before lunch and dinner, and maybe 1 or 2 glasses in the evening. You're going to chew your food well, you're going to take time and eat, and you're going to eat very little at night. After dinner, should be the end of your eating. You can have some tea. If you're hungry, maybe have an apple or a piece of fruit, and drink some water. And the idea of having a 12 to 14 hour period between what you eat at night allows your body to digest and assimilate everything, and that will reduce greatly the amount of toxicity that we generate.
Avoiding white flour products, especially pasta, which everybody's on a craze about in our country right now. Pasta is the ultimate food. To me, it's the worst thing you can put in your body. There's no fiber in it to help it sweep through the colon. You might as well just open your mouth up and pour cement down your throat. That's what happens in your colon. It's very, very constipating. Things don't move through. It has no nutritional value, and it's very detrimental to the intestinal flora.
When we're also low in some of the protective nutrients, vitamin E, vitamin C, beta-carotene, selenium and zinc, which are the commonly known antioxidant nutrients, then these substances can cause more irritation and affect cells, and the most sensitive cells, the T cells, the B cells, and some of the other cells that release immunoactive substances, these are possibly more damaged from the irritating molecules, just as generally cell membranes that offer, when a cell membrane is intact with the proper amino acid, fatty acid balance, it's much more protective, or has better defense against viruses getting into the cells and dividing and then spreading throughout our body by using our cell mechanisms to replicate themselves. And if we maintain the proper antioxidants and avoid toxins, I mean, the key is to minimize toxins in our everyday life with the best knowledge that we have, and to take supportive nutrients that will help protect us from the toxins that we do generate, because we all generate toxins on a day-to-day basis.
There are some substances that the body uses in the detoxification process which are quite valuable for getting rid of toxins from the body. And again, I'm talking not just about toxins that come from the outside, but toxins that come from the inside, that is, generated by our own chemistry. Actually, much of the chemistry that's devoted to these two compartments, inside and outside toxins, overlaps a lot, so the chemistry is more or less the same. Sulfate in the diet, for example, glycine, an amino acid, reduced glutathione is one of the major carriers of things that we don't want in our body. And it's very important to remember that this process of getting rid of things is not, as many people would imagine, just a matter of sort of smashing it up to take it out of the body, cutting up the molecules in little pieces. It is a synthetic process in which the bad chemicals are joined with a carrier that the body provides, such as the ones I just mentioned, sulfate, glycine, reduced glutathione, and this carrier ushers the toxin out of the body. In certain instances, the carrier is allowed to come back and take another load. But if the toxin is an outside chemical, like lead or cadmium or mercury or certain kinds of pesticides and so on that are not part of the body's chemistry and are not part of the body's vocabulary, really, then the reduced glutathione has to go to the dump and stay there. So it's as if you have a dump truck full of trash. The dump truck goes to the dump, and the dump truck stays there with the trash. It's a very expensive operation if you view it from that perspective.
There are many nutrients that help protect our body from damaging and irritating substances that are called free radicals. Free radicals are basically unstable molecules that are produced from the process of toxicity and detoxification. They can be generated from regular exercise, from exposure to smoke and smog and car exhaust, paint fumes, outgassing carpets, freshly painted rooms. There are literally hundreds and hundreds of substances that we may be exposed to in our daily activities. By taking and utilizing additional vitamin C, vitamin E, vitamin A and beta carotene, trace minerals selenium, and also zinc, and then certain amino acids like L-cysteine, which helps to form glutathione peroxidase and catalase, which are enzymes that are important in detoxifying chemicals. When we have adequate amounts of these substances, we're more able to run and keep current our detoxification processes, and then we're less likely to have some of the problems of toxicity.
The number to call is 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950 for Detoxification, a Natural Approach by Gary Null. Detoxification, a Natural Approach, 212-209-2950 is just a $50 contribution to WBAI. $50, ask for Detoxification, a Natural Approach. 212-209-2950.
Hi, I'd like to welcome all the people just joining us. I'm Gary Null. My program normally is at noon to 1 and taking on a lot of hard topics. Today I'm going to be taking a look at the Red Cross. They did what a great job. They were given $500 million to build 125,000 homes for Haitians. Guess how many they built, Michael G?
How many did they build, Gary?
Six.
Oh, my gosh.
Six. That's a... Gee whiz, that's almost $100 million a home. And these are not big homes. These are little tiny homes. So where did the money go? I'm going to talk about that. Also, I'm going to give a different perspective today on what has happened in Iran and Israel, a different view of the Middle East and their crisis, plus a lot on health and healing. So people won't want to miss today's program. But what we're doing now, we're doing what we call our micro marathons, meaning we take one program and ideally one per day instead of 24/7, and we offer something that's in alignment with a program that's of interest and that people can support, and in turn that money goes directly to pay for premiums and bills of the station. And it's working. Thus far, it's really working very nicely. So we're very happy about that. What we're doing now is, this is a really good one. We are going to take the third week of August and invite BAI listeners to join me and a group of really outstanding practitioners in their field down in the mountains of East, near the Arkansas border in East Texas, and we're going to have a wonderful week together. Now, why would you be interested in this? Because you're going to be in nature.
You're going to be able to look up, and there are eagles who live in the immediate area. In fact, there are eagles that live on this particular property. There's a beautiful lake with crystal clear water. Because it's never fished, you see some huge fish down there, and swans swimming, and beavers playing, and guinea hens running around. They're guinea hens because guinea hens eat lots of insects, mosquitoes, ticks, spiders, wasps, scorpions, and friendly chickens. These chickens are not going to end up on anyone's plate for dinner. They're for petting, plus other petting animals. Plus there's a butterfly house. Now, just imagine going into a beautiful 18th century French orangery. An orangery is like a glass gazebo with very ornate framing outside. And inside, on this marble floor, you're surrounded by tropical plants, wonderful aromatherapy like lavender, lilac, honeysuckle, lemongrass, jasmine. And everywhere you look, there are butterflies, all different types of butterflies, including the great monarch butterflies. You'd be sitting there, and suddenly a monarch comes over and sits on your shoulder, on your ear, on your nose, and it just really chills people out. It lets you exhale and feel really good about the moment you're in. So that's the butterfly house, but maybe you need to really just float around in some water that's one of the deepest, richest mineral springs in America. And it's right under the property, so they have these great mineral baths there. You can take mineral baths, and you can get body work done. You can exercise. You can do power walking, a state-of-the-art gym. Maybe you just want to chill, in which case there are all these different authentic Italian gardens built in the 1920s, 30s by artisans brought over from Italy. And so that everything's real. Nothing's a faux finish. Everywhere else you go, you get, you know, like concrete that's polished to look like marble. This is real marble. And there's a whole sense of history. And they have what's called a Socrates garden. That's where the lectures are. And then there's counseling. And then there are probably 20 different gardens to sit in. You can also, there's a place just go and watch motivational documentaries. Then there's the food, unlike any food that you've ever had. Food that is so beautiful, and you're going to see it being grown in trays. You're going to see over 25 different types of sprouts and microgreens grown organically. And plus, you can walk through the orchard of over 500 fruit trees and around the lake and pick fruit. And there's all kinds of plums and pears and nectarines and peaches and apples. And you can see the vineyards, the vines growing. And you can do yoga over the lake, which is wonderful, with an advanced yoga teacher. And there are meditation classes. Then you can take art as healing classes. By the way, all this is included. And we have a wonderful artist that shows people how to bring out the inner artist in you and with it to express a lot of your energy. And then we have the cooking classes, raw food classes, gourmet vegan classes, juicing classes, sprouting classes, homesteading classes, all day long, every day. And every meal, every item is different. All original gourmet vegan recipes, I've created them. In fact, I've created them, and I will be also making sure that every dish is plated. That means that you're served one item at a time, like they do in Italy and France and other countries, instead of throwing everything onto a plate. So we take our time. Beautiful environment. Couldn't ask for a nicer environment. And so that's what people do. Juicing all day long. Start your day with the healthiest smoothie, and I personally make all the smoothies, so you're getting the smoothie that I make for myself every day with all the organic sprouted walnut and almond butters and coconut and flaxseed and berries and over 20 different fruits and vegetables, and then the rice milk and bananas, and it's just delicious, but it's high in protein because I also put vegetable protein powder in it, hemp protein and split pea protein and rice protein and non-GMO items. So then you get your shots of wheatgrass with lemon and ginger juice, and you see the wheatgrass growing, see it cut. And so there's just nothing like it, nothing anywhere in the world. I've been fortunate to be able to travel all over this great world of ours. And I travel, I film, and I also see what's available out there. And there is no place to spend a week anywhere. They're good places, by the way. They're great places. Upstate New York, you got some places. You got Capella, that's a good place. You've got Livingston Manor. So you got a lot of ashrams upstate, and they're all good. They all offer something. But compared to this, it's a whole lot different. And so this is the place you come to change your health, to rejuvenate, to start a new journey of awareness and wellness. And it's only $2,500. That's it. You're thinking, how's that possible? If you, Gary Nall, are spending all your time there, and you're there from waking up at 4 in the morning and there until late at night, and you're doing a lecture every night for people, and you're everywhere there, how could this be that? Well, because of all the time that I donate to this station. And why do I donate to the station? Because of its great management? No. Because of all the cooperation between the dysfunctional family members? Not. Because of the joy of coming to a local station board meeting and hearing people loving each other? Never happened.
No.
I do it because of the audience. You know, we are gifted by having some of the finest human beings as far as their temperament, their insight, their clarity, their humanity, their humanistic values, their critical thinking, who listen and support this wonderful station. I do it for the people. And that's why I have asked many of the people who I believe in to come and join me on staff. If you paid these people what they normally make and deserve, you'd be paying around $11,000 a week. But you're not, because we're here for a larger cause. And what's good is the money we make, the station says, here are bills we can't pay. We don't have any money. So they're not getting paid, including all these other programs' premiums. We just don't have the money. Then we take those bills and we pay them. And then we get those premiums out to people, or we see that they're gotten out. That's why it's a win-win. It costs the station nothing, not a penny. They don't have to lift a finger. They don't have to do anything. Not that they would or could, but all they get is the benefit of it. So an awful lot of people are coming together to make for a life-changing, wonderful experience for the people who are in this audience and those who then are going to be benefited, because the premiums they may not get in a reasonable period of time, they will be able to get in a very reasonable period of time. So that's the deal. It's that simple. And always some new staff, and we even have room for some work study. That's where you take classes each day, but you also help. You might help in the kitchen and doing the plating, serving, prepping, cleaning up afterwards, because we serve a lot of food. I mean, these are big meals, but people lose weight. Transformations happen in people that you cannot hear anywhere else. I've gone anonymously, so I don't interrupt the flow of the regular energy of a place. I've gone, you know, just to see what goes on at some of the yoga places, and I stay in the back, and I never hear these kind of statements made about what happens when people leave these places for a week, but it will happen. Now, I'm going to later, not now, I'm going to give you a phone number to call to speak with one of the people who herself had a life-changing experience coming to one. And so you can hear her story. But before we go there, why don't we hear from some people who were at the April retreat and their experiences. Mind you, these are unrehearsed, unedited. They're just on the last day after a week on a Friday. Those who wish can come up and just say what happened, what they experienced during this week. Michael G., do you have some of those ready to go?
Yes, I do. I have Martha. I think Martha is the first one we'll go with
okay.
today. Yeah, let's hear from Martha. I do have Martha, so we'll
okay.
go to that right now. Let's hear from Martha.
My name is Martha, and I attended Gary Noel's retreat for 1 week, and I had a wonderful experience. It really changed my life in a number of ways. I went down there expecting to learn about vegan food and just relax and lay around like you would in a resort, but I gained much, much more. We had a full day of activities in a wonderful environment with free animals going around freely, fresh air, good water, excellent vegan food, and good camaraderie, and the staff was wonderful. I gained so much insight into how to correct things in my life. I'm not much of an exerciser, but I learned the importance of exercise. We had a personal trainer to teach us how to do power walking and use the exercisers in the gym and how to breathe and build up our muscles. And the environment was also very spiritual. We had spaces for meditation. We had yoga and art and all of those things. I went down to the retreat with a breast tumor, and I had the opportunity to have energy work done on me. And I noticed that after the energy work was done, that the tumor was reduced by at least half. I didn't tell anyone that I had cancer when I went down there. And no one really knew, but I mean, just the concept of energy working like that is just phenomenal. And I know a lot of people will not believe it, but I'm glad that I was able to witness it for myself. I am so grateful for the opportunity to have gone to the retreat because I was given new lifestyle changes that I will incorporate into some of the things I was already doing. And it's just a wonderful thing. It's a blessing. And I would encourage anyone who, even if you're healthy, to just have the experience. It was wonderful. Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Daisy. I enjoyed myself very much. I was not aware of the relief that I was going to receive. Gary was not aware of anything concerning my sickness or my illness. When I went there, the energy, the walking, communicating with other people, it just helped so much. The exercise, the yoga classes, everything was just perfect for me and for other people. It was amazing how people just was so enthralled with what was happening. We just went there to enjoy ourselves, but it was a miracle how things happened. As for me, my last day there, taking a shower, I had a lump under my arm. I never expressed it to anyone. It had been for maybe a couple of months. And I'm taking a shower, and I'm feeling under my arm. I'm not feeling anything. I said, maybe this is not right. So I went and I put more soap and I'm washing again. And when I finished, I just laid down across the bed. And I just thought, thanking God for what had happened. But I was so grateful to have had the opportunity to go there and see what was happening. The energy, so much energy, birds, oh, the air, the water. It was just amazing. Thank you so much, Gary.
Those were just some of the testimonials of just regular people saying what had happened to them when they were at the retreat. Now, I don't promise anyone's going to have that happen to them. I never make promises. After all, I'm not there to diagnose or treat any condition. This is not about, you know, having a terminal illness and coming thinking you're going to be cured. That's not it at all. That's not what this is about. No one's ever asked if they have any health condition because they're there to de-stress, cleanse, detox, eat good, exercise, and have a wonderful day, every day, to be around a loving and supportive staff, the best of the best staff I could possibly bring together. That's what it's about, being with nature. Almost every scientific study shows that the more we're around nature, the better we are. Children that are around nature do better. Adults that are around nature are less depressed. We need green space. Now, when you're in New York City, you don't get a lot of green space unless you get into the parks. And we have great parks here, Cortlandt Park, Prospect Park, you know, Central Park, Riverside Park. Yeah, but how often do we get there? And do we get there when we're doing a run in the morning and that's it? Then we're in the glass, steel, concrete, the noise and pollution of the rest of the city the rest of the day? Remember this, nobody moves to New York City for their health. All right, you move here for other reasons. Best culture in the world, great minds, career, opportunity. And then once we get that or in the process of getting, then we start looking at, well, gee whiz, should we go to the beach? Should we go to the mountains? Should we go to the shore? Should we go, you know, someplace to rebalance ourselves? Well, this is that opportunity to rebalance. And people of all ages, people in their 80s and 90s, people who are in their 19, 20 years old have been there. So it's the third week of August. It's 1 week. It's not a lot of money. That's relative, of course. If you have none, then it's a lot. But it's a very reasonable amount if you were to go anyplace else. If you were just to go upstate to a yoga retreat for a week, well, for just yoga. Now, I've been there. You have brown rice, seaweed, some miso soup, and apple juice, three times a day, sometimes some beans. And I've even been in a place where a bunch of people slept on mats in what looked like a large gym floor. I'm sorry for the noise behind me. I'm on a phone, not yet in our studio. That'll be in a little bit. In any case, and that was, you know, $1,500. If you wanted a private room, you paid extra. Well, here, you're getting magnificent surroundings, great food. You're getting lots of input, and if you need help, you're getting that help also. And I'm going to give you a number in a moment, but I want to turn you over now for a few moments to a woman named Luann Panessi. Now, let me give you a little background on Luann. Luann was a very successful nurse administrator. She had background in emergency room, critical care, and oncology. She oversaw anywhere from 60 to as high as 100 people in her wing. She was well paid. There was a downside to this success, she'll tell you. She also had some life-challenging conditions. At least three of them, in all probability, would have ended her life. And through a friend of hers, she came to see a lecture I did, was not, you know, she was not impressed, and then she came to a retreat down in Texas at the Healing Springs Ranch, which thousands of you attended. It was a wonderful place, and from 1989 to 1995, I had it, and I actually bought it from my brother, who wanted to be a cowboy, and since we grew up as hillbillies in West Virginia, And his lifelong ambition was to live like a cowboy. So this was really his, I bought it for him. So when he passed, I no longer, you know, that energy was gone, and that's why I got rid of it. In any case, but when we were there, what a wonderful time. And I would only be there once a month, or once a year in the month of August. And people go on hay rides, and we had a big lake on the property, and there was power walking and some good food, but nothing compared to what you get now. But people had a great time. And at the end of the first week, someone called me and said, I just saw there was a woman standing out there. This is like 6 o'clock in the morning. Saw a woman standing out in front of the lodge. And I said, about what? Well, she got a suitcase. So I, you know, I was out doing my morning runaround, so I went over, and there was this woman. Again, I didn't know her. And I said, what's happening? She said, well, I'm just getting a ride for where? To the airport. And I said, it's a two-week retreat. She said, I know, but I got everything I needed. I said, how could you possibly get everything you needed in 1 week? You know, we planned this for 2 weeks. And she said, no, I got everything I need. And then I had a little conversation with her. And at the end of that conversation, I said, okay, you know, well, I hope that, you know, you get enough to help you. And a little later, I came back and didn't see her. I thought she'd gone to the airport. Well, she hadn't. She decided to stay an extra week. It was during that extra week that everything came clear to her. She came home from that and decided to change her life. Now, mind you, think of this. Think of having reached what a lot of people in our society believe is, you know, the top that she could go. You know, she couldn't go any higher unless she became a nurse practitioner. But she got, the big bucks, the security, and all this, yet she was living with life-challenging illnesses, stressed to the max, no personal time, working early till late at night, and she changed her life. Today, she's one of America's foremost holistic nurses, educators, lecturers, and she has personally counseled probably, I'm guessing, around 5,000 to 7,000 people. And she probably still doesn't have a personal life because she gives these people her home number. That's a big mistake. Dumb. Never give your patients your home number, Luann. Anyhow, but there are a whole lot of people alive today who I believe, and they believe, wouldn't have been. And other people have a quality of life they didn't have. So she's the one that talks with people to see, is this for them? Now, Michael G., this is not for everyone. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd like to think that everybody would benefit from this, but the reality is not everybody will. I remember, do you remember Arthur Ashe?
Yes.
Do you remember Stokely Carmichael?
Mm-hmm.
Remember Bob Marley?
Yes, indeed. Yes.
And those and Godfrey Cambridge and other African Americans I work with. Mm. And the difference was that Arthur Ashe and Stokely Carmichael would come down to the center night after night and talk with the people who were there getting therapy. And not me, they talk with them. And Arthur wanted to see the medical records, and of course you can't show someone's medical records without their permission, but these people gave permission, so the medical doctors gave him the records, and they looked at him, and because he wanted to know whether or not this therapy that was being done down there to over 1,200 persons with full-blown AIDS and all these other conditions really worked. And after months of being there on a regular basis, he was convinced that it worked. But he wasn't convinced that he should go against his doctors. And so he never took the therapy. And I remember with Carmichael, I said, look, don't go to Africa. He was on his way to Africa. I said, get the therapy now and then come back. And then you can go to Africa. But if you go to Africa without the therapy in your state of health, you may not make it back. And, of course, he didn't. So I'm used to people realizing that even though the therapy could help them, the protocols could help them, they're not in the right place with their mind at that time to really benefit. And unfortunately, if you've got a serious illness or a life-challenging illness, you may not get another opportunity. So in my world, you have to be in the right place at the right time with the right support system and the right idea and be the right person. If any one of those are missing, it's like trying to open a door and it won't open because one of those chambers is not aligned. And how many times do we go someplace because there's something good and there's good people, but we're not good. We're not in the right mindset. We're carrying our anger or fear or insecurity or excessive self-righteous judgment against others. We're the finger wavers. You know, someone gets in your face and waves their finger and, you know, gets in a staccato moment of, you know, denouncing everything. Then you're not the right person for that moment. You won't get it. You won't watch the eagles in the trees. You won't get the quiet moments. It won't be for you. So I'm not suggesting that this week is for everyone. It is not. But for the people that do come who are really ready to change, it is. And they get it and they benefited from it. So I just want to share that with you. And do I promise anything? Not at all. And even though people say, you know, I didn't tell Gary I had this and I didn't have that and I had this, I take no credit for any of that. All right? Now I want you to hear Lou M. Panessi share some insights about her experience the first time she came to a retreat and what has changed in her life almost 24 years later. Lou Ann?
Hi, everyone. Yeah, well, what Gary said was pretty much it in a nutshell. I was pretty much stressed out, but I still had that bizarre belief that our medical community was actually looking out for the public's best interest, even though in my heart of hearts I saw that we just kept, it was the same old game. People would come in with symptoms, we'd give them synthetic drugs, do what we called a million-dollar workup, so we got a lot of money from insurance. And I was stressed out. I had no time. I drove in traffic every day. And often I was so exhausted because I had chronic fatigue syndrome. I was drinking 13 cups of coffee a day. And many times I'd just come home from work, just collapse on the couch and fall asleep and wake up 2 in the morning to put on my pajamas and finally go to bed. And it was just when I saw this opportunity to come to a retreat. I didn't quite know what a retreat was. It wasn't really in my vocabulary. So I wasn't, I didn't know what to expect, but I took the leap of faith. I went. And it was life-changing. And what I learned was the importance of a quiet mind. I learned how to actually eat a meal without having to have conversations with everybody around me. That was a big challenge. I learned about I got a lot of insights into what was really important to me. And I learned how to eat correctly. And when Gary said, well, we're not going to have any dead birds or dead animals or mother's milk from other animals, I'm thinking, what do I eat? Air? And boy, oh boy, did I learn what delicious gourmet vegan cuisine tasted like. It was just nothing like I've ever had before. The combination of spices and nuts and seeds and beans and all the different greens, I had no idea we could put things together like that. So it was an amazing opportunity for me, and I stayed that second week, and that's what made all the difference. Now, I'm not saying everyone should stay both weeks. If you can come for 1 week, have 1 week that will have the opportunity to change your life forever. Because Gary's there with you. I'm there with you. You have, and I only take upbeat, positive people. I don't allow anyone who's negative, angry, judgmental, who jumps to conclusions without getting information. I can't have those people because they're like a cancer. They infect an entire group. So we don't have people like that. I interview everybody, and I'm really good at it. Now, for those negative, creepy people, we have places for you to go as well. So it's not as if you won't be able to enjoy a retreat. There might just be other places that might be better geared for you rather than this, because you're going to be in a bucolic environment. And I volunteer my time, and I'm going down there for 3 weeks. The first week is booked. I have openings the second and third week of August. I volunteer my time because when I first met Gary Null, that's when I started listening to WBAI. And I realized there is not another station in this area that gives the information that WBAI does. I don't always agree with the management. I used to be on the local station board. I didn't like some of the things that went on there. To me, they were immoral. However, the whole purpose, the philosophy of WBAI, I hold very close to my heart. I now have a new set of values that are guiding my life. And since I went to that retreat, I had the courage to run 4 marathons. I competed in the Masters Track and Field World Games and took home a silver medal for our country. I've gone on to get a degree in Chinese medicine. I'm a health and wellness counselor, a coach. I have my degree in natural health. I never looked back. I fired myself from the hospital, Michael G. Got myself fired, got a severance package and went on and started a whole new life and never looked back. And when people see me today, they don't believe my age. They don't believe all the health conditions I had. I reversed hepatitis, herpes 1, herpes 2, herpes 6. I lost my eyesight from cytomegalovirus when I was in third grade. Mm. And I gained my eyesight back little by little, bit by bit. So it could be a week of doing nothing or a week of doing everything, but either way, it's your choice. We have a lot of activities. Now, who goes to these things, Michael G? People, I have single people from 18 to 90. I have fathers and daughters. I'm fathers and sons. I have husbands and wives, boyfriends and girlfriends. It's a whole mix of people, and that's what makes these retreats so great. And they're coming from all over the country. Not just WBAI, because people are listening. So come on down. Here's the number to call. I'm at 631-504-6198. That's 631-504-6198. You'll probably get my answering machine. Leave your name and your number and say I'm interested in the retreat, and I will get back to you within the next 48 hours.
Wow. Well, we appreciate that, Lou Anne. Appreciate you taking time this morning to join us and talk about the retreat. And we heard some of the people talking about their experiences at this retreat. It's $2,500 for a week. And that number that Lou Anne gave out, it's 631. And that is the premium, by the way. It's not anything that's sent to you. Lou Anne will give you all the details and just when she calls you back. It's 631-504-6198. 631-504-6198. Gary?
Yep. Hang on, we got to get Gary back.
Okay, we got to get him. Got to get him back. But you know, we're just taking this time to support the station, and you know, Gary doesn't have to, but he does this out of love for the station. A lot of problems here that have been going on over the years, as you heard both of them say, and I haven't even begun to tell you some of the things that I think about this. But that's not what we're talking about and about right now. We're about helping to support the station, and that's what everyone, you know, that claims to love the station should be doing.
And Michael G., you're right. The bottom line is this. If we have a way of helping people de-stress, detoxify, rejuvenate, cleanse, exhale, relax, rebalance, get a different perspective. Sometimes we have to get out of our immediate environment to get a perspective of what's wrong with the place we've been, how we lost our balance. Think of people who overwork. They're good at what they do, but then they forget they have a rest of a life to live. Mm. Well, we're out of balance. And anytime you're out of balance, you're always going to have a consequence. So we want people to understand that. So when they're doing meditation and they're doing journal writing and they're just communing with the butterflies and they're with no distractions and no obligations, just show up and be positive. That's all. Negative people, angry people, bitter people, judgmental people, this is not the place for you. There are other good places that will help you. I'm very conscientious of the energy that exchanges. Mm. I want positive people. I have to bring people from Detroit, California, from Maine, from all over for staffing because of the balance of their energy. They coalesce like a symphony of all the people coming together. Because if you got a negative staff, you got a bitter staff person, it can spread.
Sure.
You know, I want people, I'm assuming when people are coming that they're going through a lot of stuff in their life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't ask them about it. It's none of my business. But I'm assuming that they have stresses. I don't want to burden them with extra stress. So we do everything we can to take that stress away and replace it with love and joy and happiness and nature and being with beautiful, giant, 150-foot trees. These trees were brought in from Oregon in the 1920s and planted. So they're huge and a beautiful lake. So anyhow, people want to join us for this week. They could change their whole life. Give a call. Now, did Luann give you her phone number?
Yes. Yes, she did. And
okay, we
can give it out again. We want give people it. To call. It's 631-504-6198. And as Luann said, she will call you back within 48 hours. 631-504-6198.
Good. Now, let's play another clip. These are just regular people who had a very exceptional week.
That's right. We'll do that straight away. 631, just let's stand by this. 631-504-6198. This is WBAI in New York. We're at 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. One more time, 631-504-6198.
My name is Joyce, and I've just finished a two-week stay at Gary's retreat, and I can't really say what this has meant to me because I don't even know yet, but I know that it's totally turned my life around. It's been the most incredible experience of my life for a lot of reasons. I came down here as a stage four cancer patient ready to go into hospice, and I'm walking out of here, literally walking without a cane, without anything to help me, and feeling better than I felt in a year, 3 years. And I'm so grateful, so incredibly grateful that I've had this time to reevaluate a lot of things in my life. I literally was unable to walk without some type of aid when I came here, and within 3 days, I put the cane down and I was walking and sort of power walking, nothing like what they do down here, but I was doing it in the best way that I could. So I cannot say enough, and I don't even expect people to believe what I'm saying because it seems so phenomenal that I would have a breast tumor that would go down almost two-thirds while I'm here because of the attention, because of the energy, because of everything here. I go home a different person, literally go home a different person. So I can only say thank you to everyone here, to all the people that have played a role in this. I sort of came here against my better judgment, not believing that anything could really make that much of a difference. And knowing that if I had 2 months left to live, that at least maybe Gary Null could help me make the best of those 2 months. And I go back fully charged and ready to go to work and continue where I left off 3 years ago. I was a registered nurse for 40 years. And one of the things that I did was I was a certified chemo nurse, chemotherapy nurse, and worked a lot in heart, lung, liver, kidney transplant. But my belief in chemotherapy was that all my patients that had had chemotherapy were dead, and I was not going to take it, so I went in the natural route. I had 3 breast tumors initially 3 years ago that metastasized into bone cancer, liver cancer, and spinal cancer. And at this point, I don't feel that there is any pain there like I was having. I was having excruciating bone pain for which I was taking narcotics for, and now that is gone. And so I am just blessed to have been given this opportunity and every person here that has made this happen. I only wish I could make it happen for other people so they can benefit from this also.
Hi, my name is William, and I came down to Gary's retreat feeling stressed, I guess, some of the normal general problems everybody has, and trying to get kind of back on track. And all I can say is what a wonderful atmosphere to de-stress. I feel like I've been helped immensely. It's just made a good impact on me, validated some things I wasn't sure about. And coincidentally, I have a mass or tumor on my back, and I didn't really come down here for that. And I had some energy work done, and I can't believe it. It seems like it's gone down at least one half. And I know that sounds unbelievable, but it's unbelievable to me also. And I don't know. It's just very informative, very positive. I don't know. I feel very invigorated. I'm just so glad I came, really. I had no idea it was going to be like this, and I was going to feel like this.
My name is Gemma, and I have been a natural health care practitioner for over 30 years. I came here because this is a time in my life for a new beginning for me. And this was the very best decision I could ever make. Everyone on the staff is supportive and loving and very constructive. The environment is so balanced and loving and nurturing. And through Gary's guidance, I learned to go in and allow nature to heal me. And I'm just very grateful for this opportunity. Everything is just so lovely and pristine and balanced. But I'm taking much with me, and I know that I'm capable of a new beginning in my life.
Hi, my name is Elaine, and I'm finishing off a week at Gary Null's beautiful retreat. And I have to say, it is one of the best things I've ever done in my life. The energy is amazing, and it's a place where you can really work on every aspect, your emotional, your spiritual, your health, your well-being. Everyone here is so supportive and loving, and I don't know, I just think I'm vibrating in a whole different energy now. I can go deeper into my meditations. I feel much lighter and much more energetic than when I came here, and I consider myself in fairly good physical condition. I think I'm on the path of taking care of myself, and I'm so grateful to have had the opportunity to come here. It's just a blissful experience. You can't really describe how you feel. Just the whole place is just filled with this fabulous energy.
Okay, Michael G., those are just a few more inputs from people who are there. We're running out of time now. I have to get ready to go on the air in a few moments. So we have raised money today for the station. We're paying bills for the station. Ideally, the bills would be paid by the station for money that it raises, but unfortunately, it's not in a capacity to do that. So we're helping it as best we can with the premiums that the station selected. Mm-hmm. And hopefully those who have not received their premiums from all programs will now start to get those premiums out. We have a lot of dedicated volunteers who are organized around Jim Dingman and others who are helping out. So, you know, we're doing a lot of voluntary work all over the station to help it in its hour of need. So this is a good premium because this is a premium that could change your life. And remember, you could do this, or you could have go down and watch Democracy Now! For $2,000 and have a bite to eat later. Or you could have everything that was just said for $2,500 or work study $1,500. Think about that. think about, are you ready to have a week to really de-stress, detoxify, rejuvenate, rebalance?
Well, let's give out these two numbers now. Let's give out, if you want to get in touch with Lou Ann Panessi, she'll be calling you back in a day or so. It is 631-504-6198. 631-504-6198. And the money comes directly to WBAI, and you'll have a wonderful week down the ranch with Gary Null. But if you're still interested in detoxification, a natural approach by Gary Null, we've had a lot of interest of that for that over the past hour and a half. It's still available. It's a $50 contribution. Make your calls right now. $50 is comfortable for you. If that's what you can do to support WBAI, give us a call right now. Folks are waiting to take your phone call. This is a thank you gift to you for supporting WBAI. And those thank you gifts, detoxification, a natural approach, that award-winning DVD that Gary had been talking about, it's sitting right there. I can, like, throw a pen right across to where it is right now. Well, that's an exaggeration, but it's right across the hall from me right now. Boxes of these that we over-ordered for $50, a $50 contribution. My name is Michael G. Haskins. Thank you so much for your support this morning. It's been very good. A good morning for us here at WBAI. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Detoxification, a natural approach, a $50 contribution. Make your calls right now. 212-209-2950.
There was a woman in Georgia, didn't feel just right. She had fever all day and chills at night. Now things got worse, yes, a serious bind. Times like this, it takes a man with a style like getting out of a vine. A doctor of the heart and a doctor of the mind. If you like country with a funky thing, here's a man to me. If you like the sound of shuffling feet, here can be me.
For the best in rhythm and blues, reggae, ska, calypso, and all the musical cultures in the rich African diaspora. I listen to the Midnight Ravers on alternate Fridays over listener-sponsored non-commercial radio WBAI 99.5 FM. The Midnight Ravers, where every show